It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for yet another live broadcast. Sorry about last night. I tried to make it clear that I wouldn't be on the air. I announced it last week and Monday night. And family. I had family in from 700 miles away, so we went to dinner. Had a lovely time of it. Thanks for your forbearance. That means that it is Wednesday, the 17th. Day of April 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us online. That, of course, is where you go if you'd like to click on the chat room tab and pick out a screen name and a password and jump into the merry, madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. And if you do that, you'll be greeted by the likes of Anatole and Jimmy and Otto DeShot and Squeaky, all early arrivers to the extravaganza, and capably moderated by midweek pinch hit utility chat room moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgia Stan. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and it's Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Yes, it really, really is. And that means that, you know what that means, and we'll get after it here in fairly short order. Let's see. We have thank yous to send out. We send out thanks at the beginning of every program for our subscribers, people who set it and forget it, and then, a quarter of the way toward knocking out fundraising for any given month. Thanks this evening to Laborman and to Samuel and to Nancy. Thanks yesterday to Timothy, Reinhard, and Glenn. Thank you all so very, very much indeed for being subscribers. And remember, Tony and Chico trying to give the subscriber base a little shot in the arm has a subscriber challenge on the table all the way through the end of April, okay? And to that end, Tony and Chico is willing to double the, up to $50 worth of subscriptions. That means if you subscribe at $10 this month, Tony will turn that into $20 this month. If you subscribe at $25, Tony will turn that into $50. If you subscribe at $5, that Tony will turn that into $10. So that's very generous on Tony and Chico's part, and I hope someone will take us up on that generous offer. Now, where are we for fundraising for this right now? Not good. We laid a $250 egg on Monday, and it's $250 this evening, so that makes $500. 10 at 50, 50 at 10. One at 500, that ain't going to happen. Two at 250, four at 100 and a quarter, eight at 6250, 16 at 31 and a quarter. After that, 32 at, oh, wow, $15. I don't know. But anyway, we got $500 to raise, and it's going to really suck if we're at 750 come Thorn in the Side Thursday tomorrow. So hopefully we can take a bite out of that $500 because, again, bills remain to be paid. In fact, there's one due today of about $400. So that's where that stands. If you'd like to help out, run on over to headon.live, click on contribute, and follow the bouncing PayPal. I don't think anything bounces, but you get the idea. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, letting me know headon.live stream is up and running, and as is the White Rose Society stream. That is tremendously helpful. It's great when everything works. So it's so very, very great. Yeah, you didn't want to hear that, did you? I didn't want to do it. Thank you very kindly. Steve in New York. Lakotai from Dumbo, which stands for Loud and Clear on TuneIn from Down Under Manhattan Bridge Overpass in Brooklyn. Thank you, Steve. Thanks for letting me know. And so let's get busy with the whole prayer meeting Wednesday thing, shall we? Yes. It was a warm day here today, so the little old blue-haired lady sent me out into the yard, had me fire up the grill. Nothing quite like pork chops, thick pork chops, done over hickory coals, and we wrapped up and roasted some apples in aluminum foil, and that makes them easier to core. And so it was pork chops and roasted apples, and the little old blue-haired ladies pulled out their the little bottle of Fireball whiskey that they keep in reserve for medicinal purposes only, and put it with some butter and brown sugar in a pan and made a glaze for the apples. And so it was the apples and the pork chops there in the fellowship hall for fellowship prayer meeting Wednesday dinner. Oh, it was some kind of yummy. Had some nice vinegary coleslaw to go with it. Mm-hmm. And old-fashioned four-layer pie over on the dessert table. Butterscotch, chocolate, and lemon. Your choice. Not all at the same time. You know, the home-baked flour crust with the pecans in it and the layer of sweetened cream cheese, and then the layer of whatever the flavoring is, and then the whipped cream on top. Whoo! Oh, the deacons went wild. And having left not a crumb in the pan of that wonderful, wonderful crust, they trundled their massive bulk up that couple of flights of stairs, and brethren and sister, and they headed right out to the parking lot where they set to chain smoking with the sinners. You know, I've often wondered, I've never stayed to find out, but I wonder where all those sinners come from. I think they're there just to tempt the deacons away from the faith. Or maybe they're coming from the strip joint across the street. There's no real way of knowing, but they were out there just a huffing and a puffing until Sister Carol Baker showed up at the vestibule door with the cathedral cattle prod, solar powered, just crackling in the humid mid-April air. They heard the first snap, and the deacons took to running. They stumbled and bumbled past the vestibule door, through the vestibule, past that desiccating bowl of butter mints, and, well, brethren and sister, and they're waiting down here, and they got a grim and businesslike look on their face because they know there's $500 to raise, and that means that they know they're probably going to be on their feet most of the evening. So, brethren and sistren, I'm going to call up the minister of music to lead us in the offertory prayer. Take that heavy brass-bound velvet-lined plate, press the PayPal button in it, and use your finger on the little sensor glass and put in whatever makes you feel right with the Lord, And hopefully we will take a big bite out of that $500, at least $250 of it this evening. And because being in a $500 hole at the midway mark of the month is not a good sign, brethren and sistren. So, Brother Minister of Music, if you would, please.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world. The fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! This man is clinically insane!
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen!
Amen!
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord!
Praise the Lord!
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around!
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around!
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bing, bang. I love you. Welcome, brethren and sister, to Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Amen. Ho! Glory. I'm a calling on you right now, unless you got your hand on the plate and your finger on the button, to get up off of your seats and onto your feet. Yes, indeed. Amen. Get up and move on and screech and scrooch and wiggle and waggle and waddle and move without rhythm so you won't attract the worms. And come on out and come on down that blood-red aisle and fall. Fall upon your knees at the altar. Ho! Amen, brethren and sisters. And put your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays of common sense a-flowing through you from the server on high. I am Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized, Agnostic, Vicarious, Vicar, Maximum, Metropolitan, Munificent Mullah, Bob Kincaid, and this is Prayer Meeting Wednesday from the Cathedral of Common Sense. Amen and amen. Brethren and sistren, it has been a rough week for the religiously faithful, at least the white European ones. Oh, brethren and sistren, it has, as they've sat and worried and fretted about where the money will ever come from with which to rebuild Notre Dame Cathedral. Amen. Hallelujah. But there have been miracles, many miracles, brethren and sistren, as billionaires from across Europe have ponied up, and even Donald Trump has said that some of your taxpayer dollars will go to help rebuild that there cathedral. Amen. But now the real sign that this is going to be a surefire miracle has transpired. See what I said there? I used a word with spire in it. How about that? clever that way. It's a gift. It's a gift to the Holy Spirit. Yes? Yes, as a matter of fact, brethren and sistren, the Walt Disney Company. Walt Disney Company has pledged $5 million to help rebuild Notre Dame Cathedral. And the minute that the word was out that that was going to happen, well, brethren and sistren, Brother Senator Ted Cruz, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, took to his tweeting machine, he did, to declare that news to be wonderful. Just wonderful. He said, wonderful, will we see Disney princesses in the new stained glass? I don't know, but I'm suggesting that Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, it sounds to me like he's auditioning to play Quasimodo. Exactly, Odo. And a fine one he would make, misanthrope that he is. Yes. I'm glad to see that Rafaelito is paying attention to the spiritual needs of folks in France. Of course, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, has never, not once, tweeted a word about helping to raise funds to rebuild the three historically black churches that were burned by a Trump supporter in Louisiana, Stan. Not a peep. Not a tweet. See, peep, tweet. Yeah, right, yeah. And we're coming up on Easter, so, you know, that was unpaid advertising placement for peeps. Yes. Don't try this at home. I can just see him now, a-swinging from the belfry, a-tugging on the ropes, and a-hollering, sanctuary, sanctuary. But, brethren and sistren, there are greater challenges facing our country today than what happened to Notre Dame Cathedral. There are. I commend you, for instance, to the words of E.W. Jackson, pastor and radio host and former political candidate in the Commonwealth of Old Virginia. Who is terribly worried. Terribly, terribly worried about Pete Buttigieg. Mayor Pete, as he is being called, is getting a great deal of publicity these days, especially because he does a pretty good job of dealing with hecklers like unto your E.W. Jackson types. A simple meet and greet with Mayor Pete turned into a full-on rally recently, and there was some evangelical freak there who was hollering things like, "Hey, Mayor Pete, what about Sodom and Gomorrah, huh? Yeah, I'm referencing Sodom and Gomorrah because I ain't got no goddamn idea in the world what's in that holy book of mine, because I don't know nothing about that verse in Ezekiel where it says that this was the sin of thy sister Sodom. that they were full of pride and not very kind to strangers. Yeah, I missed that one. What about Sodom and Gomorrah, Pete? Because I go to church that says that Sodom and Gomorrah got nuclear blasted because of the homosexualism. That's what they teach me there at my church. Freedom of religion and everything. Well, E.W. Jackson spends a great deal of time worrying. Well, I don't know if he's worrying or not. Can you worry with one hand? E.W. Jackson spends a great deal of time pondering. Let's use that word, pondering. Men having sexy time together. I think old E-Dub probably spends more time thinking about men having sexy time together than men who have sexy time together think about having sexy time together. Funny how that works out. Yeah. Here's E-Dub. He knows what would happen to Merca if Mayor Pete was to become the president.
When he announced his campaign, one of the things he did to, I guess, commemorate the announcement, Pete Buttigieg, or whatever it is, was to kill.
Listen, here, let me help you, E-Dub, since you like to think about these kinds of things. Let me help you with the pronunciation. You could use the graphic that they put up on his announcement video that says boot edge edge, or being as how we know how E.W. Jackson thinks and what he likes to think about, let's pretend, E-Dub, that you're in a strip joint and it's just full of hot hunky men. And you're looking at the hot, hunky men, because we know you think about men having sex all the time. And you are grading their posteriors. Well, at that point in time, E-Dub, you would become a booty judge. Pete Booty Judge. And I know it'll make you feel better, E-Dub, if you think about that pronunciation that way, being how you like to talk about big, strong, strapping, hunky men. We had that a couple of weeks ago.
His
not big, hot, strong, hunky men, but him fantasizing about him.
His husband on stage, yes. Big old smack in the mouth.
Yeah, see, he was struggling not to say big old strapping, hunky man now, wasn't he?
Between two men. And you know.
Yeah, he's sitting there. They's a kissing. Woo!
I just have to say this, and I'm going to say this to release all the people out there who think it but can't say it. Okay? All the people out there who think it but they're afraid to say it because, of course, you get vilified for saying this.
Wait a minute. Is E-Dub going to come on out of the closet? E.W. Jackson, come on out. Nah, I don't think. But he's going to say something for everybody who can't say what it is they're thinking, because they're all feared. Big old smack on the mouth, eater. Yes. Right. Whew. Getting a little steamy in here early, ain't it? Well, it is 83 degrees here in the Fabulous Horn Studio at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. If it wasn't for me having to be here in the virtual pulpit, we'd be doing some naked radio. Can't be naked radio because Agnes ain't back here. Did she hear that? Hopefully not.
And of course, this is the kind of thing, say, I have no plans whatsoever to run for public office. So, you left us out there, can calm down. because they are afraid somehow I might run for something and maybe one day win. But no, I want to keep doing what I'm doing.
One day. Not lately. Not tomorrow. Not next week. Not next month. Not next year. Someday.
Doing for the foreseeable future, unless and until the Lord tells me to do something else, because I missed my time on radio when I was away running. I missed that time, and I am really glad to be back, and I want to stay here and keep doing this. And by the way, it's a lot more fun.
That whole part was the tell where he was remembering how he got his booty judge handed to him that time when he ran for election.
I'll tell you something, folks. Running for office is not fun. This is a lot more fun. I enjoy this a lot more, you know. But let me say this, because it is needed to release all those who want to say it but cannot. A normal man is disgusted by the idea of two men kissing each other in the mouth.
E.W. Jackson is apparently defining himself as a normal man. Normal, of course, being little more than a setting on a dryer, as our dear departed friend Peter Godbold once remarked. Is disgusted. Thing is, disgusted is a really, really powerful, powerful word. It means there's got to be a whole bunch of emotion attached to it. And most of the time, disgust and anger and fury and hate, well, those are psychological masks that people wear to cover up things like fear and yearning and desire. Mm-hmm.
A normal man is disgusted by that. People can try to be politically correct all they want, but a normal man is disgusted by it.
Wouldn't you love to hear E-Dub define what a normal man is and maybe and talk about what some normal sex is and what a normal life is? I mean, when you consider all the things that old E-Dub has said that we've focused on here on Prayer Meeting Wednesday, I don't know about you, but I don't think normal has much in the way of a going concern these days. Not if it means you got to be like E-Dub.
Because it is not what God made us for. It is not the way we are wired. It is not what we are made for.
P.S. There's really nothing in the book that he thumps so much and doesn't read about being straight or gay or anything like that. A lot of silly shit in there about not wearing clothing woven from two different fibers. You know, say, goat hair and camel hair. The mere thought of that makes me scratch. Now, you can get stoned outside the city gates for that. You can be cast out of the community for going down to the beach and having you a fried shrimp dinner. If you're a mouthy youngin, your mama and your daddy can take you outside the city gates and throw rocks at you until they bash your little childish brains in and kill you. But there's not so much, there's stuff about behaviors, but they're not necessarily the way that they are portrayed by these ignorant people who wouldn't know Aramaic from Reformed Egyptian. So I just mentioned that because E.W. Jackson, being an evangelical Christian, is first and foremost a liar. And so what he's saying here is lies. With the subject line, E-Dubs, Scott in San Diego notes, that clearing of the throat wasn't so much a tell, as in poker, as it was an attempt to dislodge an errant bit of pubis from his upper glottis. Pubis from the upper glottis. Well, 29 minutes past the hour. We're trying to stay out of the gutter here, but, you know, the fact of the matter is, I would wager that pubis from the upper glottis is a phrase that has not been uttered on any other radio program anywhere in the new 90 states of America on this here day. No, you got to tune into the horn for that kind of thing. And as the deacons pass amongst us with the plates, I would remind folks to please throw a little something in the plates there. The deacons get awful testy when they have to work all night long. And, well, halfway into the first hour of the program, we're at zero. And it's not good for the deacons' morale. Half asleep anyway from that sugar buzz that they picked up, knocking down the dessert. And, well, doggone it. Have a little mercy on the deacons, would you?
Men are made for women, and women are made for men. And the two complement each other.
Now, see if it wouldn't screw up the audio file and cause all kinds of bells and whistles to light up. I would have already by now had kisses. I was made for loving you, baby. Right there, and we'd put it right there, and it would be a radio masterpiece.
Two men were not made to be sexually involved with each other. Two women were not made to be sexually involved with each other. And so,
unless E-Dub's watching,
they do this publicly because they want to wear down the sense of disgust that people feel. They want to erode it. In fact, that was one of the big strategies that they came up with.
Does that mean it's erotica? Art of word knowing, y'all.
After their big riot in New York at some nightclub where the police came to try to shut things down because there were complaints and whatnot, and they had...
I think he's talking about the Stonehenge riots. That new Stonewall, yes. Stonehenge was Spinal Tap. Stonewall riots. Seminal moment in the cultural history of the gay community in the latter part of the 20th century in the United States. Great moment in American history, as a matter of fact, as people denied constitutional freedoms, goddamn well demanded them. Stonewall.
Had a great big riot and fought the police and rebelled and all that. And one of the strategies they came up with coming out of that was that you have to wear down the sensibility of people by constantly throwing homosexuality in their faces.
How do you do that? I know we have many members of the Horn Family Community Congregation who are every morning they get up and they check their emails and they've gotten their latest update from the gay agenda. How do you throw homosexuality in somebody's face? Are there paper towels involved? I mean, was that why Trump was chucking them rolls of paper towels down in Puerto Rico, because it's so damn confusing trying to keep up with these dirt dumb bigoted pig eyed ignorant freaks throwing it in people's faces. How is it? And we've asked this question before, but I've never come up with a satisfactory answer. How is it that every time these evangelical shitbirds start talking about sexuality, things have to either be going down throats or in faces, and it all sounds like it sounds like scenes that they've watched when they locked the doors and went to Pornhub or Pornhamster there on the interweb tubes, because remember, evangelicals are the biggest consumers of pornography in the United States, particularly in the states of Alabama and Utah.
Keep it before them. So they just basically just give up and say, well, yeah, it is what it is. I don't even want to see that. I really don't. I mean, it's disgusting. And all the men in America.
It's disgusting until somebody asks him to join in. That note coming in from Steve in New York. Hey, guess what, E-Dub, you bigot MF-er? Most people are not disgusted. It's the legacy bigots, such as yourself, who are. Point of fact, I remember times when people were disgusted at black folks kissing in public. or, God forbid, black folks kissing white folks. Even if it was one black man and one black woman, or one white woman and one black man, or one white man and one black woman. Oh, miscegenation! And unless I'm mistaken, old E-Dub comes from the Commonwealth of Old Virginia, which in fact gave us the Supreme Court case, Loving versus Virginia, because Old Virginia had a law on the books that said it is disgusting for black folks and white folks to get married. Precisely. Flavio with a note. E.W. Jackson. He really does spend too much time thinking about it. In Portuguese, there's a saying, merda e bosta. Quem fala gosta. Roughly, shit is poop. You want a scoop? I think I understand that.
All the normal men in America know it's true. They know it's true. But see, you know, you just can't say that anymore because, oh my goodness, that's bigoted. That's hateful. It's just the truth. It's just the truth. You know what? When God calls it an abomination, you know what an abomination means?
Well, what you don't know, E-Dub, is that God has not called that an abomination. One, and that's leaving out the whole idea of whether or not there really is a great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky. That we'll save that for another day. But homosexuality is not what he was referring to. And anyone with a half a lick of sense who's actually studied the ancient languages and the ancient cultures could tell him that. But, well, that gets in the way of E-Dub's narrative, so instead, let's find out what he thinks an abomination is.
It means something particularly detestable, and it implies that it causes you to become nauseated. That's what it means. You know, like God says, because you're neither hot nor cold, I will spew you from my mouth. It's that kind of image. It's the image.
Again, with the spewing in the mouth.
Says. And of course, we know God is not getting sick of the stomach, but it's an anthropomorphizing of God's.
Ooh, he's hauling out the big words to impress the rubes. I thought anthropomorphizing God was again one of them commandments. Guess it is. If you anthropomorphize God, that means you make God into something that looks anthro, which means human, which means graven image, which thou shalt not.
Feelings about it, God's convictions about it, God's principles about it, and he says it is abominable, it is particularly detestable. The sad thing is, folks, we're going to see more and more of it because they've figured out that the strategy works. When you've got that going and then you've got the mainstream media that will lambaste, ridicule, vilify, seek to destroy anybody who does what I'm doing right now, who just speaks out and says, well, look, we know, but this is the truth.
Yeah, Lamb, he's trying to insulate himself there. But no, when you're stupid, people have a tendency to call out how stupid you are. And E-Dub is straight up stupid with a capital stu.
This is how normal people feel. And they are basically forced to suppress those feelings because of the gay mafia and the degree to which they will try to destroy anybody who won't go along, anybody who won't say, yes, this is great, this is fine, this is good.
Gay mafia. I'm guessing they don't just, you know, drive long black Cadillacs and wear black suits and gay mafia. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, subject line, disgusted. They were so disgusted by the thoughts of a black man kissing a white woman that they would commence to lynching that black man. P.S. Skip a bit, E-Dub. Yep. And so, E.W. Jackson... A.W. Jackson says that Pete Buttigieg now that we've helped him learn to pronounce it, is going to issue in an era of a, wait for it, homocracy. Homocracy. Mm-hmm. Remember when E-Dub and his buddies were out there hollering that all them heterosexual marriages were just going to collapse like a house of cards the minute that people like Pete Buttigieg got to get married? You remember how all the courts were just swamped with divorce petitions the minute that, it, no, you don't, because it didn't happen? That. A homocracy. And make no mistake, E.W. Jackson, in his own way and of his own sort, is a terrorist. And because he would use hate to motivate people against their fellow citizens to achieve a political end. Just because this freak displays his ignorance on a daily basis, and because he's not ranting and raving, does not mean he is any less a terrorist in his own right. And with words like homocracy, he hopes to motivate. I mean, who tunes into him? Is he playing to the ultra-conservative, homophobic wing of black Christianity? Or are Emery and Marveline up the holler there, pink as pink can be, tuning in because somehow he makes them feel better about their own bigotries, and maybe even makes them feel good about how much they kind of hate him, too. Well, there we go. By the way, Billable Rick has awarded a cowbell to Scott in San Diego for pubis from the upper glottis, and I think that's well-deserved. Steve in New York points out, we are all Homericans now. Homericans. Well, I think there is some of that kind of, well, in Homer, yeah. Mm-hmm. Could be. Translation from Flavio, those who are always talking against something secretly want it. Earther, homosexness forced upon us. He's right about that, though, Bob. Every time I get on the bus, if there's a gay couple, I get an unsolicited kissing lap dance from them. Now I only enjoy because it would be rude to not accept it. Secretly, I hate it. Well, confession is good for the soul, Earther. Thank you for bringing that to the program. Now wait, says Scott. Don't be scooping out heaps of that what normal men do crap, E-dubs. Even the largely out-of-date Kinsey report on the sexuality of men from the 1950s notes that instances of same-sex activity between men is entirely normal. I'm sure more current scientific studies offer even clearer data about human behavior. Bill in Pennsylvania, Stan. Subject line, gay mafia. They don't drive black Cadillacs. They drive pink Cadillacs. And the late, great Peter Godbold would, without a doubt, agree. Then, a little bit, more on the serious side of things, Randy in PA says, I seem to recall a different kind of mafia who forced gay people to wear pink triangles in a most uncomfortable setting, and the newer form of that mafia is palling around with Trump. Well said, Randy, well said. Scott then points out, I'd much rather live in a homocracy than I would in a Jethrocracy. How did we get to Jethro Bodin so easy? That's a little worrisome. Bill Rick pointing out that pubis from the upper glottis is indeed some awesome wordplay. You were slow on the uptake, Bob. Yes, but we corrected our error, and that's what matters. It, by the way, just because it's funny to think about, the name of E.W. Jackson's little religious radio program is called The Awakening. For a bunch of people who, well, live in darkness. A perpetual night of hatred and bigotry and fear and longing and yearning. More than anything, I think E.W. Jackson wishes he had someone to love him the way that Pete Buttigieg and his spouse love each other. Because the soundtrack to whatever relationship E-Dub is in has been nothing but a loop of The Thrill Is Gone for probably the last 40 years, if there was ever any thrill in the first place. Yeah. So that's just a beginning. I'm going to run over to the phones here in a second, but I want to share a little bit more because there's some interesting prophetic news breaking, courtesy of Mark Taylor, the firefighter prophet. We've heard from him before, and God has given him the sacred word of wisdom. If you didn't already have the hockey puck out, get it out now. He was talking to some woman who talks to her laptop, to the webcam in it, by the name of Tiffany FitzHenry. Well, now that sounds positively royal. Oh, and by the way, thanks to our buddy Texas T for getting us going this evening. We are off the schneid, and we only have $480 to go to finish fundraising and get even with the middle of the week. That's awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Texas T. Thank you very, very kindly. Back to Tiffany FitzHenry. Apparently, low-rent white-wing broadcasting consists of people yapping at their webcams. In this case, Mark Taylor has a set of cans. Tiffany FitzHenry does not. And, well, never mind what else is going on in the country. There's big news about to break, and I'm not talking about the dummied-up, faked-up, frauded-up, rubed-up, ginned-up, not Mueller report that's due out tomorrow. No, this is serious stuff.
What is your instinct? What do you think about his actual birth? Is he not American?
I don't think the guy's American myself. I could be wrong. That's just my opinion. I'm not.
It's just his opinion, and we know who the guy is, right? Yeah, it's not Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, who really was not born in the United States. Remember, he's a Cubanadian. No, this is a pair of white people talking. So we know who they're talking about.
Prophesying that, I have talked to one of the investigators on that team, the birth certificate team, and they've got evidence. So it's already been proven that that birth certificate is a phony. You know, and people want to say, oh, you're going to bring up the birther thing again. Give me a break. That's stuff fast. No, you don't understand, guys. This is huge important because if this guy is a fraud, and Q has even said himself, that he will claim Kenyan citizenship to keep from being charged for treason.
Q has said himself. In which Bond movie? Q has said himself. And since when is Q a he? It's just a real gender party going on here, isn't it?
Now, if he claims Kenyan citizenship, then that means he was a false president, in which case every decision this man has made is now null and void, including the two Supreme Court justices.
Oh, my gosh. Wouldn't that – oh, my gosh. That is dynamic, as you say. That would be highly dynamic.
So, again
– What, Edith, huh? That would be highly dynamic? Tiffany Fitzhenry and Henry Fitztiffany? Dynamic? You'll notice that this is what's diverting Emery and Marveline's attention there on the matching Barca loungers, even as we're finding out more and more that the Trump administration is just a rolling criminal enterprise with no one willing to stop them. Yeah. Thanks, Henry. Thanks very kindly to Henry and to Glenn. So that means that we are down to 418 bucks. We're started. We're on the way. That's awesome. The deacons are smiling. There's a spring in their step as they move among the pews. 418 bucks to go, and maybe we could catch up with Monday's 250. That'd be awesome. That would be dynamic.
And people don't understand. Yes, the birther thing is important. You don't throw that out with the bathwater. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. It is important because if he does claim Kenyan citizenship, then he just admitted he's not, to save his own skin, basically, he's just admitted that I wasn't supposed to be president. He's not here from America.
He's not here from America. I wish I was making this shit up. I wish I was getting up every morning and saying, hey, I tell you what, Agnes, I want you to sound like you're about 14 and a half and you wear an infant size zero, and I'll change and we'll talk about where's this coming from? Oh, he's going to claim Kenyan citizenship. Because, you know, you can just do that. I mean, I've been worried about it. I mean, I got my U.S. passport. But maybe I just need to claim me some somebody else citizenship. Kenyan? I'd be okay with being Kenyan. I'd kind of like to be Costa Rican or maybe Belizean. Speak English there in Belize. But I'm not too old to learn Spanish. I could be Costa Rican. Live in a real democracy. Holy shit. Well, I'm just going to claim it. Jesus, in your holy name, I claim Costa Rican citizenship. Amen. Done. He's going to claim it. That's what he's going to claim. Citizenship. Kenyan. I got a bunch more. It's kind of a Mark Taylor evening. Because this conversation with Tiffany Fitzhenry and Henry Fitztiffany, well, it had legs. Yes, and Henry Fitztiffany does belong to Scott in San Diego, so a little preemptive cowbell on that. But we're verging up on the top of the hour, and let's check in with Tracy real quick and see what's going on, because speaking of having fits, Tracy may be having one. Are you, Tracy?
Christ on his fucking... Wow. Well, you know what? This just confirms, because, see, I don't know if I sent you that article. I might have, but I was half tired. There was an article today in The Root about how I didn't realize how powerful I am as a black voter, because apparently it's our fault, black people's fault, that, you know, Trump was elected, not the 53% white women that, you know, voted for Trump or anything like that.
Wait, whoa, hold the hell on. African-American women turned out more for Hillary than
See, it was just a joke. It was a joke because they were, you know, Democrats have this ability to, you know, because, see, a lot of black voters are calling into question people's, you know, whether or not we want to vote for them as president, for president, you know. And it's like, you know, we're questioning, you know, Kamala Harris. We're questioning Bernie Sanders. But see, Democrats are pissed off that we're questioning because they're like, well, you need to shut up and just vote for who we want you to vote for.
Like, I didn't know that there was an anointed one.
I didn't. Dude, neither did I.
Did you? Was that in your radical black agenda email? I mean, and you're just holding out and not sharing with us?
Well, it was that plus in my gay radical agenda, you know, because see, that's, I'm feeling really powerful today, Bob, because see, you know, homophobia.
Oh hell, you may unleash a volcano, Tracy.
I'm just overwhelmed. I've never felt so powerful in my life. I don't know what to do with all this power. It's kind of like what would I do if I won the lotto? You know, what would I buy first? What would I do first? But see, now, you know, it's up to me, you know, because he is a problem. And and the article was really good because it brought up, you know, it brought to the forefront of the fact that African-American voters are very important to the Democratic Party. And however, the problem is the Democratic Party has a problem with acknowledging the fact that they need black voters because if,
because that makes the delicate sensibilities of the wealthy limousine liberal white folks all tingly. Is that it?
Yeah. So, you know, if we say stuff like, you know, we need to address police brutality. We need to address, you know, saying that, you know, black lives matter, not all lives matter, not blue lives matter, not all blue lives matter. We need to address the, you know, preschool to prison pipeline. We need to address things about voter suppression and, you know, instead of just playing lip service and actually do stuff, you know. So it's, you know, I think people, black folks, are getting kind of tired of just, you know, we want you to vote for us, but we don't want to do shit for you. And I'm hearing, you know, Miss Jackson in the back of my head singing, "What have you done for me lately?" You know, what are you doing? And it's not just the black community, it's the Hispanic community, it's the, you know, Native American community. You know, we proportionately vote for you people, for Democrats. You know this.
Now, it's okay if you want to throw you people out there. You got one coming.
Okay. You people know that you guys want us to vote for the Democratic Party. However, what are you seriously, I mean, what was the last major thing the Democratic Party really did for black people since the Civil Rights Act? I'm asking you seriously. It's not a rhetorical question.
Well, I mean, okay, I'll give you a serious answer. It didn't get just a hell of a lot of play in the multimillionaire for-profit media. But the job one for this House of Representatives, once it got into sane hands, and it wasn't, I mean, it had a symbolic aspect to it, Tracy, but it was not entirely symbolic. I mean, they meant it in earnest. They'd like to pass it. The first piece of legislation that they introduced and passed was by way of restoring the Voting Rights Act, making access to the ballot and the polls simple, easy, and in light of what the Republicans have done over the last 20 years, de-racistified, de-clanified. I think it was significant, but it was not. It wasn't thumped on.
I think
that's a pity.
It is a pity. The right thing. I mean, between. Look at here now. I get exhausted, you know, and now I probably understand why I'm, you know,
weary.
So exhausted. You know, like, you know, I have more than likely sleep apnea, and I'm going to do a sleep study sooner than later to find out and have to wear a goddamn CPAP mask and all that.
I don't know how you're supposed to fall asleep. I did a sleep study once. I'm just going to warn you in advance. I didn't sleep a wink. Because it's hard. I mean, I don't want to put a suggestion to you or anything, but they had me all wired up with goo in my hair and these electromodes all over me, and I'm one of these people. I got to move around when I'm asleep. I got to roll over, sleep on my side for a little while, roll to the other side, sleep on my back for a little bit. Move. I run rabbits in my sleep, and. And I spent the night untangling my pink ass from a bunch of wires.
Well, see, the place where I'm going to be going, I went online and checked out their site. Apparently, it's just what they attach you to, because my mom had to do a sleep study, and she had a bunch of wires everywhere like you did. But this place, it looks like there's only one, a band that you wear around your chest, you know, like right underneath.
Oh, glory. They must have. Well, you live in civilization, so maybe they do it different.
Yeah, I do. And then the little, you know, the monitor, little thing that they put on your finger to monitor your pulse and all that, your heartbeat,
Yeah, don't be. Just one piece of advice. Have them put that on your non-dominant hand, because if you go to scratch in the middle of the night with that thing, you can get hurt.
Yeah, you can put your eye out, kid.
I'm glad you went for the eye.
Yeah, see, that's where I go. I just, you know, but I just...
I woke up with a bloody nose myself, but, you know, who am I?
Oh, seriously?
Wow.
But it's just the nonsense of, again, these people give so much credence to the power that we don't have. As black people, as women, as gay people, it's the same people that AOC and, Ilhan, you know, these people, they give way too much energy and thought to people who, I know, I don't give a fuck about them, but it's just like, it's, you know, when as much power and stuff and freaking outness as they give to the gay community and all this, you gotta wonder. Maybe they really feel that gay people have a lot of power. But like I think Scott says, you know, could you imagine if we lived under a homocracy? Can you imagine how fabulous shit would be? You know,
At the risk of getting myself in horrible trouble, I will not.
Okay.
Because, you know.
Just think. I mean, like I was watching. I mean, especially. I mean, I'm sorry.
I mean, all the hillbillies that walk around in their camo would be color coordinated and well attired, and there'd probably
right.
You know there'd probably be a clothing allowance for every American. Andrew Yang wants to give everybody $1,000, and under a homocracy, maybe it'd have to be $2,000 just to keep up with the fashion trends.
Exactly. I mean, we would have, you know, we have that show Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. It would be Queer Eye for straight America. You know, or those who pretend to be straight. I'm just saying.
Window treatments for everybody.
Window treatments, you know, like you said, people would, you know, I mean, beards would be trimmed. I mean, I'm living for that. I mean, hell. My gay friends keep, you know, they have to, every so often they go through my wardrobe. I'm like, no,
get rid of it. No, no, no.
Don't care if it has sentimental value. It's got to go. It can be sentimental for somebody else.
Yes. It's like, you know, come on, Tracy. It's just, you know. But it's just, when I listen to people, like.
Tracy, shoulder pads are so 1983.
I'm telling you, dude, seriously. It's like, I'm odd. You know, it's when I listen to people like that, saying that, you know, just because of who I am is disgusting. And what is disgust? I mean, I'm in.
Well, you know, and you know, part of the reason that I play these things is when they say that shit, I just want to make fun of them, because yeah. they're the ones who are disgusting. They're the ones whose lives are consumed by the most toxic emotion human beings have ever developed. It's the emotional equivalent of that molecular acid from the first Alien movie that goes all the way through the fucking spaceship, okay?
There you go. I mean, it's just like, it's like the people who sit at home, you know, or in their mom's basement or whatever, and figure out ways to, you know, commit identity theft and stuff like that. They put all this energy into stealing from people and ruining people's lives. And you think, if you put that much energy into making the world a better place, or, you know, caring about people, caring about the environment, caring about people having health care, decent education, affordable housing, and all these things that, you know, are much more important than whether or not I'm having sex with a woman or my wife or what have you. Could you imagine what kind of world this would be? Could you imagine the energy, you know, that people use to deny climate change? And it's just, I think of this, you know, when I think about, the energy that is put into hate, we might be having our own Charlottesville out here in Long Beach in about a week or so, speaking of hate. Purportedly there's going to be a white supremacist march or rally or something at this park in Long Beach, which is probably one of the blackest cities in L.A., but yeah, so of course the police are aware of it, and you know, but people are definitely going to be coming out to, you know, protest these people. Right now, it's a rumor because they say a lot of these things that they, you know, they get people, it makes it look like it's going to happen, and then nothing happens. But you know, I'm tired of these people feeling as though they have skin in the game, that their speech matters. I know we have freedom of speech and all that sort of stuff, but at what point do we draw the line when it's hate speech? I mean, if somebody committed a crime, if somebody, heaven forbid, God forbid, I'm black, I'm a woman, and I'm a lesbian, so I'm a triple threat. When it comes as far as if there was a hate crime committed against me. Now, if somebody commits a crime and harms me, since the fact that I'm black, gay, and a woman, it's a hate crime. But if somebody says horribly hateful, racist, homophobic, and misogynistic stuff to me, that's not a crime?
No, they get to hide behind the lace skirts of the First Amendment.
Right. But I don't understand. Should there be a difference? Should that not be an assault upon my person?
Well, actually, you just opened the door to something I was thinking about earlier today. I don't know if we do that.
What is it? Get out of my brain, Tracy.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Did you see, because the chlamydia Claudius was infuriated by the fact that Fox News TV Radio Rwanda gave Bernie Sanders a town hall.
Heavens to Betsy.
And he was really infuriated when Brett Baer, who was so proud of himself because he was being such a smart guy, he thought he'd really destroy Bernie with it. He said, "Everybody in the audience that has employer-provided health care, raise your hands." And they raised their hands. And he said, "Everybody in the audience who would like to go along with this thing that Bernie's talking about, where everybody's going to get government health care, raise your hands." And the whole room erupted in cheers and applause.
Mm-hmm.
And there was egg just dripping down Brett Baer's face. And so Julius Geezer got wind of it and took to the Twitter. And I'm looking it up real quick. And he said, and this is important, okay? This goes back to what you were talking about. He said, hold on here. I'll get there. It could be that I'm going to have to, just a minute.
Come here.
There it is. 9:24 p.m. yesterday. "I believe it'll be crazy Bernie Sanders versus sleepy Joe Biden as the two finalists to run against maybe the best economy in the history of our country and many other great things. I look forward to facing whoever it may be. May God rest their soul."
Their soul? Wait. Huh? Okay.
That is an implicit death threat via Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
God rest their soul. God have mercy on your soul is what you say to somebody who is about to be executed by the state.
Yep.
That is an incitement. That's a dog whistle that's far past dog whistle that it's a dog horn.
It's a dog horn.
For one of his followers to do something. And when you ask the question, if you speak hatefully to me, is that not also a crime? Well, I would argue, I would argue that within the old common law meaning of assault, Donald Trump has committed assault against Bernie and Joe Biden.
Yep.
Because he has stated that he wants them to receive an unconsented to touching of an insulting or provoking nature. And that is the definition, putting someone in apprehension of receiving same, of assault.
Mm-hmm. If somebody goes out of their way, I think I've told this story about the white woman who, you know, got in my face years ago, and this is before Trump. I'm like, Jesus, I would hate to have that same encounter now. But, you know, she called me a big black bitch and said, "I bet you think you can kick the skinny white chick's ass." I'm like, I'm pretty sure I could, but you know, we're in Sherman Oaks, and if anything goes down, I'm the one going to jail, not you. And you're not worth me catching the case over. So step away from me right now. You know, she got in my face. She was basically trying to incite me to fight, and I'm like, I'm not going to go there with you, Becky. You know, I cannot be bothered. I got too many things to do. And again, don't look good in orange. I don't. So I there's so many things that I avoid. Oh, and I need to correct myself. When I said it was our fault, black people's fault that Donald Trump won. It was not, I misspoke. It's article is saying that if Donald Trump wins, is reelected in 2020, it's black people's fault because... Because
they're vetting too hard?
Yeah, because we're vetting too hard.
Well, I know it will not prove temptation because, again, you live in civilization. But news out of Talabama, Tracy.
Oh, Roy Moore.
Yes. Says that Roy Tola Moore is in the lead among Republicans for the nomination for the United States Senate in 2020. I hope every African-American man and woman in Alabama is sitting there going, yeah, we'll do it again. We'll do it again.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get out the vote some more to defeat Roy Moore.
I see what you did.
Yeah.
Mo
Brooks, Les Brames, it feels like he might like to run again. But Roy Tola Moore, and now we see what he did with all that money he raised for that lawsuit he was going to file, that he didn't. Yeah, he's the front runner. And so I hope that coalition is ready to go again. No, Doug Jones is not some fire-breathing liberal, but the day you get one of those from Alabama, do let me know. Because it'll be the same day that Joe Manchin steps to the podium and declares an end to mountaintop removal and his support for Medicare for all. In other words, never.
Exactly.
Never.
Never. Speaking of I see you, you know how I have this ability to walk into restaurants and just kind of freak white people out because of my presence? And so Saturday, Will and I and his mom were in Long Beach, and we went to have sushi, which was amazing. But anywho, Will's mom had to go get the car because where we were in Long Beach, there's no parking. You have to circle and circle and circle and circle before you find a parking space. So we were waiting for her to get the car and bring it back to pick us up from the restaurant. Anyway, there were this past weekend was the Long Beach Grand Prix. And I guess, you know, redneck heaven is, you know, auto racing. I'm not sure. But EQ, there's a whole lot more white people in Long Beach than usual. But anyway, so this white couple was sitting, had come in, and they were sitting, you know, across, you know, kind of catacorner to our table. And, of course, you know, they're looking at me and Will. And for you guys that don't know, Will is the young man that I've been basically driving around and kind of guiding and taking care of for the last, off and on for the last 3 years. And he's a young white guy. So they were staring at me. So I turned around, looked at them like, how are y'all doing? Are you having a great day? Were you guys at the Long Beach Grand Prix? And, you know, are you enjoying this? Getting ready to enjoy your sushi? I mean, I'm just having, you know, because I'm like, I hate it when I get stared at. And I looked at Will, because of course they looked uncomfortable because I had the nerve and the audacity to speak to them and make them look stupid for even questioning as to why I should be, you know, what, black people eat sushi? Oh, my God. So anywho, after they just kind of mumbled and looked down at their menus, I looked at Will, and he started cracking up because he knew what I did. Because, see, he's been around
he's in on the game
long enough. Yeah, he's been around me long enough, and I've schooled him of the ways of white people that even though he's white, he doesn't realize what white people do until I started basically taking care of him. And so as soon as I did that, he was dying. He's like, he gave me that I see you look. I see what you did look. Because we used to get those looks. We used to get those looks all the time. And I had to explain to him why we were getting stared at, you know, because there was no explanation as to why this middle-aged black woman was with this teenage white boy. You know, it's like, you know, well, she's not the nanny or the caretaker. because, you know, look at how, you know, how he doesn't look like he needs help. And I mean, if I could just see all these scenarios, you know, you could actually see the wheels turning in people's minds, like, what is this situation and what's going on? And so when, you know, when I would do stuff like that, and he's like, after we left, he's like, it's been a long time since you've done that. I'm like, I know, it was fun. He's like, oh my God. And we told his mother, and his mother started cracking up. But it's just, I learned to live in a world where I can be in the, you know, in a restaurant or store or wherever with Will, and nobody's even thinking anything, but what, not even thinking anything. You know, it's like,
why is it necessary to think anything?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's the same as when I, you know, the story that I told about, you know, a million years ago when I was sitting in the ladies' lounge in Nordstrom's nursing Alex when he was a baby, and the white woman asked me, whose baby is that? And I went into my best Hattie McDaniel Butterfly McQueen impression. You know, that is like, I asked the wet nurse, and his mama, you know, birthed him, but she didn't want to stress out her breastfeeding. And so
that's just not fair.
She didn't want to
stretch out her breastfeeding. Oh, my.
You know, she wanted her child to have, you know, mother's milk. And so she knew that I have 5 children because I'm always having babies because that's what we do. And so she had me.
She's on you. He's about on your 12th, wasn't you?
Yeah. No, I was on my 7th at that point.
Oh, okay.
You know, because I was a welfare queen and on top of everything else.
Well, of course.
You know.
Yes.
Of course. But it's just the audacity, the nerve of anybody even asking that question. Just that, you know, and this is before we even came up with the term white privilege, because I'm like, how dare you? Why does it even...
Well, was that white privilege or was that white stupid?
The privilege of having the nerve to ask me...
Yeah, the privilege of being that stupid.
Right, the privilege of being that stupid and being... And actually being able to walk and breathe and feed yourself and tie your own shoes. It's just like, you know, I could almost forgive her had we been in a third world country, or what is it called now? Not third world country. What are we calling them now?
Developing nations.
Developing nations. Thank you, because a third world country sounds horrible. Because I always, you know, developing nation. Or even if I had been down south or somewhere where that, but I'm in Nordstrom's, in the fucking ladies' lounge in West LA, going, seriously, bitch, for real, though? I didn't say seriously, bitch, for real, though. Like I said, I did my best, you know. I was a step away, you know. I said, because I don't know stuff about, you know, nursing babies. You know, in her defense, I did at one point to do kind of the wet nurse thing at one point because I had a friend that I used to babysit every so often for her. She was finishing up with, you know, taking the bar and all that, and her son did not like her pump breast milk, so I used to nurse him. And when he got older and I told him, he almost passed out. But, you know, that's what we do to embarrass teenagers.
Oh, of course.
But, you know, but that's what we do. But I'm like, you know, this was, let's see, Alex will be 31 on the 1st. So this was over 30 years ago. And, you know, the stupidity has not changed. Is I think it has gotten progressively worse. It is, again, like I said, it is sometimes, like I watch television or whatever I'm watching, and it's just exhausting when I'm watching TV or reading stuff on the internet, and it's just like the stupidity, the ignorance, or just the out and out evil of people, and it's just I'm constantly shaking my head and saying, you know, for real, dog,
it's like, but like, but then I had these bright moments, like, you know, what I told you this afternoon about, I know you don't watch NCIS or any of the NCISs, but it, like I said, Donald Belisario, I guess that's how you pronounce his name. He's the producer of NCIS. And, you know, most TV shows that are set in, you know, Washington or D.C., or there's a government office or what have you, there's usually always a picture of the, you know, if it's, you know, usually the current president, you know, on the wall in the office, in whatever offices. And when Barack Obama was president, his picture was, you know, in pretty much every office on NCIS. And like I said, they mentioned his name. There was this one episode at the beginning, and the Marine One, that was the helicopter, right?
Right.
Was taken off from the White House, and this father and daughter, it was a white father and daughter, looked up, and they're like, I wonder, you know, I wonder where President Obama is going. And the dad's like, I wonder if Sasha and Malia are on the helicopter as well. He's, and the father's like, oh, that's, you know, that would be really cool. You know, stuff like that, you know. And so, like I said, his picture was everywhere on that show. Now, Trump was elected in 2016 and inaugurated in 2017. So basically, he's been in office for 2 years now. Not one time have I seen, and I looked. I don't know what struck me to even look, but I was watching it the other
Nowhere to be found.
Nowhere to be found on that show. Nowhere to be found. He's never even been mentioned. I don't even think at any point they've even referenced the president of the United States. In the last 2 years, it's like we don't even have a president. And I'm like, and that makes me feel good. It really makes me feel good, because, I mean, yes, they'll say it's the Hollywood, you know, Illuminati liberal agenda and all this, but I don't give a fuck. Because I'll take, you know, we don't get many wins when it comes to that asshole. So I think I'll take as many as I possibly can. How about you?
Yes, precisely.
Right. So it's like, you know, I know you don't watch the Game of Thrones.
I'm going to wait till it's all over, and then I'm going to watch the whole thing.
Okay. Well, I'm going to send you this article by our favorite root writer, Michael Harriet. Who happens to be a huge Game of Thrones fan. As a matter of fact, he even has, I believe, a YouTube channel or something called Dim Bones. I mean, Dim Thrones.
Dim Thrones.
Right, and he does, you know, weekly analysis of Game of Thrones through the lens of Black people. It's fucking hilarious. But he breaks it down to, you know, like white privilege and all this sort of stuff, and how I can't really tell you because, but anyway, it's just hilarious. And how he shows, like, certain characters are Donald Trump, certain characters are like Hillary Clinton, certain characters are the epitome of white privilege, certain groups of people are straight up, you know, white supremacists, and if they're not stopped, they're going to take over. It's amazing. It is amazing.
The Lannisters are the Klan, right?
The Lannisters actually are the Trumps, because they're not as rich as everybody thinks they are.
Yeah, and they're just tacky as shit and mean.
Right, mean and just vindictive.
Oh, the White Walkers are the Klan. I'm sorry.
No, the White Walkers are white supremacists and the alt-right and all that, and if they're, you know...
And, you know, the funniest thing about all of this is, I don't know how it's going to end, but I do know some of my history, and I thought all along, because I read the first book.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I read the first book, and couldn't find anybody in there that I didn't want to see incinerated by a dragon. Which, I mean, I gotta like somebody in a TV show, okay? Just find one.
Well, actually, there's a couple of people that, you know, they're not the main.
But what George characters. What George R. R. Martin did is he took a fair amount of Middle Ages and Renaissance history that a lot of people didn't know. And he bogarted it into a fabulously popular television show.
Yep. I mean,
what are the two families? The Lannisters and the Who's?
And the Starks.
Yeah, the Lannisters. Lannisters and the Starks. Well, how about that? The War of the Roses was fought by the Lancasters and the Yorks.
Just like that article was telling me about.
Yeah.
Look, the Democrats, I mean, this is what kills me. About how the Game of Thrones has, you know, is throughout, you know, our popular culture. The Democrats need black people like the Stark needs those dragons on the Game of Thrones.
That's kind of workable, but I mean it. Yeah, can't get along without them. Can't win without them.
No, you can't win without them. You can't. You're not going to be able to defeat, you know. The other armies without, you know, without the dragons, and you're not going to
gotta have a secret weapon. Gotta have a secret weapon that scares the shit out of the other side.
Right, and you can't defeat Roy Moore without black women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like it's again, you know, start coming up with policies. You know, and here's the thing. Aside from reparations and stuff like that, just the criminal justice reform, because as quiet as it kept, as it is kept, our criminal justice system fucks with poor white people just like it fucks with black people. So if you start reforming the system and it starts helping black people, don't you think it's going to help the, you know, poor white people as well?
Well, sure.
You know, if you start enacting programs that, you know, will do away with this bullshit that we've had since the 90s for, you know, quote unquote welfare reform, don't you think, you know, the people, you know, in Appalachia is going to benefit if they, you know, say, you know, take away this 5-year limit and saying that if you have more than 2 kids, so what, you're not going to get any more money and cutting programs and stuff like that. You're going to benefit from it as well. So, and if you, you know, enact, you know, things for housing policies to make housing more affordable and available, then, you know, you're going to benefit. Everybody's going to benefit. It's not just, you know, these programs that, you know, Republicans try to say, you know, are freebies and giveaways and all this and convince, you know, white people or what have you, that it's only, they're only giving it to black people and Hispanic people and the immigrants and all that. But you're going to get it too. But, you know, unfortunately, we live, you know, in that cut off your nose to spite your face, you know, country where these people are so entrenched in their religion, in their racism, in their, I don't know, ignorance, that they rather vote against their own self-interest than, you know, see anybody else get anything. Didn't you say at one point, wasn't it true that at one point Medicare, when it was introduced, was supposed to be eventually available to everyone?
Oh, that was the thinking that went with it, that eventually it would be expanded until it was covering a significant portion of the population.
Right, but then some people are like, well, if it does, that means the black people will get it too. So we can't have that. But that means if I don't get it, then you don't get it either, stupid.
And look who all didn't.
Right. The people who need it the most. Oh, speaking of health issues, I mean, not health issues, but health issues. So I guess somewhere down in Alabama and a few other states down in your neck of the country, yet it is but to this huge pill mill.
West Virginia, Alabama, Tennessee, Ohio, and Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. They said that this thing is so bad that people were pulling their own teeth just so they can get prescription drugs, that women were having having sex with these doctors so they could get prescription drugs, that they were even prescribing these pills to pregnant women. Said that they wrote over 350,000 prescriptions a year. Was that
you got it?
Did I get that? 350,000 prescriptions a year. Even with basic math, Bob. Even at, let's just say that's $10 a prescription. I think isn't it like about 3.5 million?
Yes. One doctor was charging a $600 cash per year membership fee, allegedly, and was dealing them out of his house. Because, you know, cash.
Cash. Well, but hey, on the flip side, out here in sunny California, our governor, I didn't have to do this with legislation or anything like that. So guess what was happening out here in California as in regards to prescription drugs, Bob?
What's that?
So you know how the government, you know, bargains for drugs, you know, either for Medicare and the VA and all that? Well, we're going to be doing the same thing in California. So California moving forward will be using any California association or whatever that has to do with prescription drugs will be one huge bargaining tool. So that means Medi-Cal, that means state and local government run hospitals, that means the state retirement program for state retirees for their prescription medication and all that will be under one bargaining head. So everybody won't be, you know, bargaining separately. So basically our bargaining as far as prescription drugs in California is going to be like basically right there under what the federal government is doing. It is proposed that it's going to save us. I forget how much they said that California as a state spends on prescription drugs, but
it's a lot.
Save us about, it's a lot. We're going to save about half of that, Bob.
Wow.
And guess what? And then that
look at you, look at
where?
You, look at you with functioning good government.
Oh, isn't it? Wow. Isn't that amazing? Now, if we could just get functioning rent control in the state, in the entire state, it would be amazing. Because I don't know. I know you've heard about what's happening in cities like Inglewood and all that, aside from the gentrification, because there's no rent control in certain cities or only on buildings that are were built by a certain year. In Inglewood, where they're building that huge monster NFL arena stadium, and then there's a big fight right now about building a stadium for the Clippers. People's rents are doubling, not going up by a few
right, and people there, being and people being able to buy a home is dwindling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm so old, Tracy. I can remember when George Bush gave a speech one time about our ownership society. We under Biden administration, we got an ownership society.
Mm-hmm.
And then the chickens came home to roost, the economy collapsed, and a bunch of wealthy people bought up a bunch of distressed property, and they won't put it back on the market because they'd rather have it for rent. It is, yep. It is a 21st century equivalent to what people of Scots heritage and Irish heritage know as the enclosures.
Exactly. So it's like, you know, because and what upsets me about the fact that we don't have, you know, that we tried in 2016 to pass rent control throughout the state of California. There were these same developers that are buying up in places like Inglewood and Leimert Park.
Right,
and so
people get stuck in a persistent state of rent. And,
yeah.
and you know, the whole idea of home ownership is that someday you own the place, and so therefore you no longer have a house payment.
Right.
And mm-hmm. therefore you have a place that where you have concentrated some wealth.
Mm-hmm. But if you can't, I mean,
well, the last 19 years have been an exercise in trying to destroy that idea.
Mm-hmm. And it's working.
Oh yeah, I mean, even in a little place, I mentioned that while we were in D.C., we stayed for the first time in an Airbnb, and we did that because we had to. It would a hotel would have cost $3,000 for the time we were there,
and we spent
roughly half of that because we used an Airbnb.
Mm-hmm.
But. And they were lovely people, and it was actually their house, and we were living in their basement. Had a separate entrance and everything, so nobody had to see anybody. It was fairly nice, but at the same time, it was kind of, you know?
Mm-hmm.
No sooner did we get there than the news story started breaking about all the assholes who are doing Airbnbs who are putting cameras in the facilities.
Right.
And claiming that it's their right to do that because it's their property.
It's their property.
Now, no hotelier would ever be able to get away with that because it's illegal as all hell.
Mm-hmm.
But even in a tiny place like where I live, it's getting harder to find a place, you know, for people who want to buy a home. It's getting harder for them to do it because there are people who own second and third homes that they're holding strictly as Airbnbs.
Yep.
And so even if you want to rent from them, you can't unless you want to pay Airbnb prices.
Exactly. Right now, I forget, because they were having, they were trying to combat that issue here in L.A. by writing legislation about how long at any continuous amount of time you can use your property as Airbnb, you know, how many months out of the year or whatever. But it's just, you know, but then it's like those rights. Well, it's my home. I have the right to do whatever I want to do, which that is true. But like you said, these people are buying up properties and keep taking homes and apartments and condos out of the market for rent, and it's ridiculous. I mean, I understand we live in a capitalist society, and you know, people aren't buying properties and stuff like this to be philanthropists. But come on, at some point, you know. When does the government step in to make sure that people have a decent and safe place to live and affordable? You know, at what point does the government...
And to what extent, and the larger question, and this is the one that makes Republicans hoot like barn owls, at what point does government have an obligation to make sure that people are not being abused by rapacious landlords in their desire to just have a decent place to live.
Right. I mean, you know, they are pricing people out of these homes. I mean, seriously, how can you I mean, it's just the fact, I mean, these people, their rents are doubling and tripling. And it's not like these people have to have money. You know, they're barely making the ends meet to cover the rent. It was before it started, before they started jacking it up. I just, again, maybe I'm, like a homie Scott, I hope, I have this thing about, you try to see the bright side and try to and be optimistic and think that things are going to get better. And, but when you see, these people, they're pricing, an apartment, a one bedroom apartment that was $1,500 a month is now $3,000 a month. Not many people can afford $3,000 a month for rent, especially somebody that just got out of college with student loans and got their first job and probably driving for Lyft, Uber, working, at all these different places. So they're going to have roommates. So how many people do you think are going to be living in a one-bedroom apartment just to make that $3,000 a month rent? The wear and tear alone on people's property should be reason enough to make sure that your rents are affordable, so, that only one family or one person can live in an apartment that is designed to be that way, instead of, three, four, five people living in a one-bedroom apartment.
Right. You probably remember when we had our little basement apartment with the 8 campaign up in D.C.
Right.
It was a big common room with a sort of kitchen off at one end, small refrigerator, small cooktop, some cabinet space, living room area, bedroom. And it was in the basement.
Mm-hmm. And no window.
And that was $2,200 a month. And that was because we got a break because we were a charitable organization. And it made our work a hell of a lot easier. For instance, now that we've got some real movement on the bill, we could be up there working our little tukuses off if we had something like that. But in the 7 right. years we've been working on the bill, we went to looking around, and a one-bedroom studio is $2,800 up on Capitol Hill, where all you've got to do is walk to...
Wait, a studio or a one-bedroom?
Well, a studio.
Okay.
$2,800.
For a studio, so no bedroom, just a room.
Yeah, it's a sleep... It's a room. Yeah, if you want the full bedroom, you're up to $3,200.
Right.
And this is a real problem that runs toward, no kidding, societal collapse. Oh, and we're a little past the halfway point of the program, Tracy, and I have to put some thank yous out. By the way, I've been told by Billable Rick that I am creating a cowbell gap because I didn't give you a cowbell. Rick wanted you to have a double cowbell for I'm the baby's wet nurse because the mama didn't want to stretch out her breastises. So that's cowbell one. That's cowbell too. I regret being slow on the uptake there. But I have to send out thanks to, scroll down here. Thanks to Renee. And thanks as well to Scott. And let me see if I missed one there. I want to make sure I didn't. No, Renee and Scott, and that means that we're down to four, down to 383 to go. Classic,
awesome.
Classic Mopar engine size of 383.
On that note, so I'm going to end it because I got to get home and put my feet up because swelling. Let's see. Let's come up with a. We got to come up with a good challenge, a name for this challenge, because we got the
as the black people fall, if Trump gets 45 gets reelected in 2020, and the homocracy.
It's Tracy's Black Dragon Lady Homocracy Challenge.
Okay, there we go. So I'm going to throw out a $25 challenge for all my white people out there. I want you to tap deep into your white guilt.
I don't think they can tap white guilt over a white guy like me.
But no, because of me.
Oh, okay.
I want them to, tap deep, because, I'm here to help Bob. And so, just think you're doing it for black folks. Tap into your white guilt. And meet my challenge. It's been some. Even if the challenge is met, don't say, well, somebody will do. Just keep giving it. Give till it hurts. Do what you got to do. Just give to Brother Bob because, he's doing great work. And he keeps us sane. And whenever he, I tune in and he says that, he's down in the hole at $500 and stuff like that, I begin to panic because I didn't realize, because I didn't listen to the show Monday because I was in the doctor's office all day Monday. And so I didn't hear the show to realize that yesterday, I remember you saying that you were going to be gone one of the days this week. I just didn't remember it was yesterday. So then I listened and I'm like, oh, that's right, relative. So, we need to close the gap. So, y'all, come on now. Hook a brother up. Help a brother out. So, $25, my challenge. And on that note, I'm out. Can't wait to hear who else is going to call in. And hopefully I'll be here and talking to you on Friday, Fry on the Front Porch.
I hope so. I hope so indeed. And any idea when the sleep study is going to go down?
Well, they were supposed to call me by today, so I'm going to call my doctor tomorrow and find out what's going on and if they just want me to make the appointment myself and just go from there. And I will keep everybody abreast as to what's going on. Hey, the good news is if it is sleep apnea, apparently that if you start using the CPAP and stuff like that, it helps you lose weight.
Cool.
Hey, whatever it takes to keep me from having to exercise.
Okay, don't do that to me. All right, Tracy, you have yourself a good evening. Challenge on the table.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye.
Tracy's Black Dragon Lady Homocracy Challenge is on the table, and if it's met, we'll go from 383 to 333, and we'll be within striking distance of at least wiping out Monday's deficit. And remember, because of yesterday, everything's just 4 days at 250. I haven't raised the fundraising goal or anything like that. And then if we can finish the week even, well, by Jove, that means we've only got Monday and Tuesday left, and then everything else is fundraising free radio for the remainder of April, which would be wonderful. I've got a note here from Scott, and I don't know if I can dig into it well enough to do it justice today, but before all hell breaks loose on Thursday with the release of the Not Really the Mueller report, I'd love it if you could shed some light on this piece I emailed the other day with emphasis on Rule 6E of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure, which is linked to in the piece below. Thanks. I'll try here in a minute. I, for one, am not getting all breathless about tomorrow. And for, I think, good and logical and sane reasons. Because, among other things, the New York Times broke a story earlier this evening that was... I think we can say that it was not unexpected. Here, let me turns out, oh, by the way, those bigly deals that he's been making with North Korea, North Korea test-fired a new type of weapon, gave no specifics earlier today. In other words, the chump got played like, well, a chump. But at about 5:30, just a little bit before airtime, breaking news from the New York Times. White House and Justice Department officials discussed Robert Mueller's findings several times ahead of his report's release Thursday. How about that? The fix is in. It's like the guy who's in the know at the racetrack and says, "Oh no, you want in on this one. This is a boat race." Mm-hmm. Mark Mazzetti, Maggie Haberman, Nicholas Fandos, and Katie Benner on the case. Dateline Washington. Not all of Robert S. Mueller III's findings will be news to President Trump when they're released Thursday morning. Justice Department officials have had numerous conversations with White House lawyers about the conclusions made by Mr. Mueller, the special counsel, in recent days. Numerous, according to people with knowledge of the discussions. The talks have aided the president's legal team as it prepares a rebuttal to the report and strategizes for the coming public war over its findings. Meanwhile, the Judiciary Committee is ready to issue the subpoena for the full, unredacted report. As of Friday, they're going to let Mueller put out his dummied-up, faked-up, frauded-up, ginned-up, rubed-up version tomorrow. I got to give it to the New York Times. They know how to do some real cliffhangery writing. A sense of paranoia is taking hold among some of Mr. Trump's aides, some of whom fear his backlash more than the findings themselves. The report might make clear which of Mr. Trump's current and former advisors spoke to the special counsel, how much they said, and how much damage they did to the president, providing a kind of roadmap for retaliation. Doesn't that just sound delightfully Stalin-esque? The discussions between Justice Department officials and White House lawyers have also added to questions about the propriety of the decisions by Attorney General William P. Barr since he received Mr. Mueller's findings late last month. Let's do remember that the Barrs and the Mueller's still go to church together. Mr. Barr and his deputy, Rod J. Rosenstein, determined that Mr. Trump did not illegally obstruct justice and said the special counsel found no conspiracy between yada. Interesting adverb in front of obstruct. Did not illegally obstruct justice. So I guess, unless this is just bad writing, there is now a going theory in the Department of Justice that you can obstruct justice and yet somehow not do it illegally. I don't know if this falls under the general rubric of it's if the president does it, it's not illegal, you know, Richard Nixon to David Frost. Or some idea that, well, yeah, he did. He obstructed justice when he fired Comey, but he had a right to fire Comey, so it's not an illegal obstruction of justice. It's one of those moments when you get into that Carl Sandburg problem. Sandburg once wrote in a poem, "We raise more corn to feed more hogs, to buy more land, to raise more corn, to feed more hogs, to buy more land," and you get into a sort of a loop. Of course, the big news conference is set for 9:30 tomorrow morning. Oh, joy. At which point, I guess they'll crank up the Calliope and the willing and the credulous will gather around Bill Barr to see if they can get a big old swaller of the snake oil that he is a-selling. Best I got. Scott in San Diego says, just you wait, Bob. Before it's over, Trump will reanimate Senator John Stennis, D. Mississippi, to read the unredacted Mueller report and tell us what it says. Nixon tried this scheme with the secret White House tapes during Watergate when edited and selective transcripts of the tapes proved not believable. Well, unless somebody out there is being leaked direct damning content from this document, and I'm hard-pressed to believe that they wouldn't run to press with it if they were. And, like I said, damning content. I still think there's a lot of people whistling past graveyards right now. And, of course, once the subpoena goes out Friday, then the court battle is set up. And we engage in a great stylized drama with everything except fucking dragons. Ah, okay, well, that makes things clear. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, it would be considered illegal obstruction of justice if the president was black, Bob. Well, doesn't that just make a whole boatload of sense? And thanks very kindly to Jack in Shreveport. Tracy's challenge has been met, and then some, which means that we are now down to, .308 to go, and if we can raise 58 more bucks, well, by Jove, we will have taken care of Monday. We won't have touched Wednesday, but we will have taken care of Monday. Let's run over to the stress line and see what's going on there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's me, Reggie, from Decatur, Georgia, yet once again. And it's been a while since I gave you some NRA news, man.
Oh, yeah? You got something from the NRA?
Yeah. I got plenty from the NRA. And the first and foremost, and I'm looking at it right now, and it's a number one fan favorite, you know. It says here that the first one I'm looking at is NRA spokesperson Dana Loesch defends Trump's tweet about Representative Ilhan Omar. Loesch. It was literally, I repeat, literally a replay of her words, meaning, referencing to Omar, Representative Omar. There's a video clip on it, too. You know, on her show, NRA is Relentless, Bob.
Yeah.
It's still up there, Bob. It popped up there yesterday. It popped up there yesterday. Yeah, it certainly did.
Yeah, see, what makes me crazy out of all this is that we've got two instances now where the President of the United States has threatened the lives of sitting members of Congress. That's illegal.
Yeah.
That's illegal.
That's true. Yeah.
And except for the fact that we've got this sick notion that the President of the United States is above the law, he should be prosecuted for it. You know, there's a lot of damn difference, Reggie, between 2019 and 1804. But it is worth reminding people that in 1804, I believe it was 1804, one man so vilely insulted another.
Yeah.
That the man who was insulted said, screw it, I'm calling you out.
Yeah. Right.
And the man who called the other guy out was at the time the Vice President of the United States.
Right.
And they rode across the Hudson River to the plains of Weehawken in New Jersey and had themselves a nice little duel.
Right.
And so Alexander Hamilton, who had sleazed, think of Alexander Hamilton as a maggot of 1804. He had just sleazed Aaron Burr And so Aaron Burr killed his ass.
Right.
Because there are some right. things that are so nasty that it's ridiculous to expect people not to respond to them. That's where the concept of fighting words, Randy in PA sent me an email a little bit ago about the fighting words doctrine. That's where that came from. That is a prior restraint on speech that says right. that there are some things that are so provocative that they are an incitement to riot just by their usage.
Right.
That they are so provocative that somebody is going to engage in violent conduct simply because of the use of the words. Now, the fighting words doctrine has been it's been narrowed considerably over the years.
Right.
But what is a person supposed to do? You know, Twitter, if you put up the same sorts of things that Donald Trump puts up, Twitter would suspend right. you and throw you out forever.
Yeah, they would do that. They'll do the exact same thing to you too, Bob.
But he's the only right? but see, he's about the only thing keeping Twitter alive.
Right.
And so Twitter won't shut him down, even though he violates right. its community terms of service every time he picks his phone up.
Right. Right. But,
he is engaging in illegal conduct that, even as we speak, goes unprosecuted.
Yeah, that's true. I'm sure Facebook will take him down, too, or they blocked him. Or did they block him?
Well, he doesn't use Facebook. Facebook has too many words.
Right. So he uses Twitter, whose laws he breaks, because they won't block him even though he violated their laws one too many times. And people are afraid to go after him. I'm talking about people in his party or the GOP. And conservative talk radio just loves him, and so does Fox News Channel. And speaking of which, how did you think about your boy Bernie Sanders just obliterating them at that town hall conference?
Hold on a damn minute. How's he my boy? I know.
No, I mean, your friend. How do you feel about him just obliterating them at that town hall conference at Fox News?
Well, Julius Geezer said it was because the audience was unfair and it didn't have enough maggots in it.
Right.
Really, I'm not surprised that Bernie would get a good response from Fox News TV, because there's probably a significant amount of overlap between maggots and burners among the ancient demographic that watches Fox News.
Right.
It will be a different story when Pete Buttigieg has his town hall there. And in fact, right. Angelo Carasone, who runs Media Matters now, pointed out that it's going to be extremely ironic that Democrats are going to be the ones who financially bail out Fox in what was otherwise going to be a really, really poor revenue quarter.
Right.
Oops.
Oops. I thought they weren't supposed to debate them or give them a debate. I thought they weren't.
Well, they weren't. They weren't. And now all of a sudden, the geniuses are saying, "Oh no, you know." My God, when MSNBC is telling candidates to go on Fox, I mean, did the sales manager at least pick up the phone and go, "What the fuck are you people saying?"
I don't think so. I don't know, but I don't think so. What about you, Bob?
I got nothing.
So. Yeah, well,
but
if
you're working in, say, local media, and you've got an on-air guy, an on-air personality who says, "Hey, I want y'all to all tune away from me and go tune in to our rival station," dude will be encouraged to go and see if rival station would like to have him working for them, because that ain't good for business. Oh, Reggie. I think I lost Reggie. I hate it when that happens. And by the way, never had any Bluetooth problems whatsoever with the other gizmo, so I'm still working on getting that in line here in the studio. Well, just the same, let's run over and I think we got Scott over on the other line. By the way, yeah, we've got, what did I say? Yeah, we got about, what, $58 or something like that to get Monday covered. If we can finish that off, that'd be wonderful. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. We timed that just perfectly. I was doing the dishes and finished those up and scurried back in here, and here we are. Here's something totally unrelated to today's show content, and I got this from Bill Maher's Facebook feed. Carl's Jr., a chain of fast food outlets here in California and probably other places in the West, will become the first major fast food chain to debut a cannabis-infused burger. Ooh.
pardon me if that doesn't appeal to me. I mean, I like my weed and so forth from time to time.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, there's one within a two-minute walk from where I am living and sitting right now. So, if you don't hear from me much in the coming months,
okay,
it'll be because I've gone down to get me a burger.
Well, and how much longer will it be after this before you get cannabis-infused Budweiser from the brewery in Azusa, California? Or is that Miller?
Well, there are craft beer places where recreational pot is legal that do have cannabis-infused wine and cannabis-infused beers, as I think. I don't know.
I mean, you can get, hemp-infused, hemp-flavored beer even here.
Mm-hmm.
But again,
but it doesn't have the good
stuff. I like strawberries and I like oysters. But I don't want any oysters and strawberries. You get my meaning?
Yeah. the cannabis burgers notwithstanding, I resent you that thing about the unredacted report, the Mueller report. What with Thursday, just around the calendar corner. And also, when I reread it last night after I sent it, I checked out that link to Rule 6.
Billable Rick and I went over Rule 6 one night.
I must have been napping.
But, I mean, there are loopholes in there for being able, you know, for just sort this sort of situation.
Well, here's the thing that pisses me off, because see, I'm old enough to remember. Oh, and before I forget about naming other broadcast outlets on your own broadcast outlet, I'm old enough to remember when there was just on TV, ABC, NBC, CBS, maybe an independent if you lived in a big enough market, and maybe a PBS station if you lived in a big enough market. But guests visiting Johnny Carson to plug an upcoming TV special, if it wasn't running on NBC in the coming days, he would mention, and it is on another
network.
Yeah. Now, there were only three networks, but even in that limited scope of things, they were loath to mention the competition, you know. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But the thing that pisses me off about Attorney General Barr, is my understanding correct? Is the Attorney General, aren't we his client, his main client?
You mean we, the people of the United States, as in every criminal case brought by the Department of Justice is brought in the name of the people of the United States of America versus? Yes, we are.
Okay, so if we are his client, what is he giving an early heads up to Trump and his cronies?
Because he's crookeder than a dog's hind leg, okay?
Well,
that man is so goddamn crooked, they'll have to auger him into the dirt when he fucking dies.
That's kind of where I was going, Bob. And can we at long last learn something from our recent history? Wasn't it Nixon's Attorney General, John Mitchell, who, as Attorney General, okayed and financed the dirty tricks operation?
John Mitchell, yes, absolutely.
Operation Gemstone.
Yeah.
Presented on fancy flip cards by G. Gordon Liddy, of all people.
Yeah, when Bill Barr shuffles off this mortal coil, if you extract the criminality out of him, you'll be able to bury him in a fucking snuff box, okay?
Yeah. He'll have that minty wintergreen essence around him for all eternity. I forget which snuff has the wintergreen flavor, but because I never did snuff.
That would be your Skoll.
Skoll? Yeah.
Yeah, they give up on... There was Skoll, Copenhagen, and Happy Days Mint, and they give up on the Happy Days Mint.
Yeah.
I think it was at the rise of Happy Days, and everybody thought it was going to taste like Fonzie.
Ooh. Ooh.
You know, sweaty leather motorcycle jacket.
Yeah. Ooh. Don't want none of that coming up my nose.
But it's not just that. I mean, I'm glad you mentioned Barr because there's something else I wanted to talk about, and that was an announcement made earlier today that the Department of Justice has determined that Donald Trump is allowed to have all the remoluments what he wants. You know, no, I'm kidding, but emoluments.
Yeah.
A headline from The Guardian today: Trump hotels exempted from ban on foreign payments under new stance. I guess it's a wide stance.
And it differs from the stance that the people are taking, which is bend over, hold your ankles, and hope for the best.
So hold on for a little text here from Peter Stone in Washington. The Department of Justice has adopted a narrow interpretation of a law meant to bar foreign interests from corrupting federal officials, giving Saudi Arabia, China, and other countries leeway to curry favor with Donald Trump via deals with his hotels, condos, trademarks, and golf courses, legal and national security experts say. The so-called Foreign Emoluments Clause, which Mr. Stone does not note in the first two paragraphs, is in the fucking Constitution. It's not some pissant law. Was intended to curb presidents and other government officials from accepting gifts and benefits from foreign governments unless Congress consents. But in a forthcoming article in the Indiana Law Review, the Washington University law professor Kathleen Clark reveals Justice Department filings have recently changed tack. The new interpretation, Clark says, is contained in justice filings responding to recent lawsuits lodged by attorneys general and members of Congress. I find this article interesting because, once again, we were so far out in front of the curve here at the Horn, it felt like we were on straight road, because we've talked about this, Scott.
Yes.
Clark's article notes that in more than 50 legal opinions over some 150 years, Justice Department lawyers have interpreted the clause in a way that barred any foreign payments or gifts except for ones Congress approved, but filings by the department since June 2017 reveal a new interpretation that would permit the president and all federal officials to accept unlimited amounts of money from foreign fucking governments, I added the fucking part, as long as the fucking money, again, I added the fucking part, from foreign fucking governments, as long as the money comes through commercial transactions with an entity owned by the federal fucking official, the professor writes, without all the fucking. So, there's only one problem with that. The Department of Justice does not have the right to make that declaration, because the Constitution in the Emoluments Clause is crystal goddamn clear that the only way that the president or anybody else can be cleared to receive emoluments is if the Congress says, hey, Mr. President, take all the emoluments you want. We, Congress, acting under the power granted to us by the Constitution of the United States, have cleared you to receive them. Dig it?
Mm-hmm.
Guess what Congress has not done? That.
Yeah.
And in fact, it was, I think it was Monday night when I pointed out that the dumbass Republicans, when they had the majority, could have whipsawed a bill doing that through so fast that the Democrats' heads would have spun. But they did not do it. And you cannot, I argue, you cannot do it retroactively. Because the Constitution establishes a standard and says this is the standard. If you want to change it, Congress has to change it. There's nothing in there about the DOJ can change it, or the Attorney General can change it. But by God, Bill Barr was brought in there to cover Donald Trump's ass and keep him out of jail.
Yeah. And that, I mean, we all suspected that when he was named as the nominee, okay? But it's becoming clear to anybody willing to look with open eyes that that's what's going on. You still with me?
Yeah, and again, crooked as a dog's hind leg.
Yeah, yeah. So I just sent you another piece that as you do the studying up on Rule 6, there it outlines another precedent given to us by the Republicans recently, which should clear the way for the people to know what the hell is going on regarding this, these parts that have been redacted. And it, of course, it may be one of those deals where, well, it's okay if you're a Republican asking to hear what the grand jury had to say. But if you're not a Republican asking to hear what the grand jury had to say, then you can't play this game, you know?
Yeah. And by the way, I just had a note from Billable Rick. This is going to be a little complex, but maybe I need to ring him into this or see if I can.
Go ahead, because I trust Billable Rick's expertise and yours, because you know you've forgotten more about law than a lot of us have ever known, I think.
Well, let's see.
And just while you're doing that, the thing that pisses me off is every last little teeny tiny infinitesimal bit of this could have been avoided in 2016. I don't want to relitigate that, but every little bit of this could have been avoided had we behaved appropriately when we had an opportunity.
But her emails!
We're just so short-sighted. I mean, and a lot of us.
Well, you know, easy with that "we" there, buddy.
Well, no. I say "we" as it's inherent to human beings to not play the long game or to think to have magical thinking.
No, it's inherent in the sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade to not be able to see the see past the ends of their upturned little noses.
Yes, I will give you that. But what I'm getting at is three states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and what was the other one? Wisconsin, 77,000 votes. There's even on our worst day, there's no time when Democrats can't muster 77,000 votes among three traditionally blue states to keep this from happening. And by this, I mean where we're currently at. But anyway, go ahead.
That was an engineered election, Scott. Plain and simple.
I know.
Rick did join in. Hey, Billable Rick, are you there?
Yes, I just typed in, and whether this is an impromptu front porch, apparently it is. A mini porch, we'll call it.
Well,
this is a consultation.
Yeah, this is a front stoop. We're not all the way up on the porch. This is there's just room for a couple of us here.
The check hasn't cleared yet, though.
But I wanted to bring you into this because your name had already been taken in vain, and you'd already emailed about obstruction of justice.
Okay.
But this Guardian story about the Department of Justice saying, "Aw shucks, Trump can take all the emoluments he wants."
Mm-hmm.
Is it just me, or does that stink like 3-day-old mackerel in 90-degree heat?
I put it more like 2-week-old mackerel in 90-degree heat. Yeah, it stinks. It stinks.
I mean, I know the Attorney General. The Attorney General has the right. The Attorney General has the right to interpret the law for certain purposes.
Mm-hmm.
But it does not constitute the law per se.
No.
According, at least, last I checked, it's still in force and effect. According to Marbury versus Madison, the Supreme Court has the final word.
Right. Obviously, bar to prosecution might differ after that, you know?
But if the Supreme Court rules, he's duty-bound to behave accordingly, correct?
Well, yeah, he is, yeah.
So how would you create case and controversy now that they've done these filings to try to make... I got to frame the question right. So there are several federal district courts who are at present hearing emoluments cases, correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So this DOJ position paper, if you will, mm-hmm. doctrine, it doesn't even rise to the level of regulation, does it?
No, it's an advisory opinion, Bob. That's what I'd call it.
Yeah. So DOJ lawyers march into court and say, "We're the federal government, and you, Mr. Federal District Judge or Madam District Judge, must throw out this case because Bill Barr, the prosecution, has declared that that Trump can take any money he wants from any foreign government he wants." Now, okay, you chuckled a little bit. I'm guessing that depending on the federal judge, that would probably rise to the level of fucking guffaws, wouldn't it?
I would think so, because the way that the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution is written is it only gives Congress the authority to waive any emolument or to allow emoluments. And last time I checked, Bill Barr, the prosecution, is not Congress.
And wouldn't an advisory such as you've described be a preemptive act up against a federal a proceeding that is already underway?
It would have no force or effect. I don't think it even rises to the level of, let's say, an amicus brief, you know, where a non-party is allowed to submit briefs in a pending case to try and, tell the judge what the judge or the judges what the law is or what it should be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's even worth the paper it's written on, to tell you the truth. You know,
but it's like an intrusion. It's a preemptive effort, in my mind. I don't know enough about how law is conducted.
I don't think it's, you know, I just think it's more of a feckless attempt to influence to influence the outcome.
I mean, a federal district judge, Rick, could say, because I sit around writing scripts in my head, okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It could look at the little DOJ lawyer that walks in and say, "Yeah, I know you're here on behalf of the Department of Justice, but I'd really like to have a face-to-face with your boss. Why don't you go out, and we'll take recess, and you go out in the hall, and you get on your little cell phone, and you call back to the office, and you tell Bill Barr I want him here yesterday to explain to me how he has jurisdiction to tell me how to interpret the Constitution. You know, me, the Article 3 federal district judge who serves for life." You go do that. I'll go get a cup of coffee and run to the little judges.
I'll expect your boss here in an hour.
I mean, the court can do that, can they not?
Oh, gosh, I've had judges request that, yeah. Federal judges request that, let's say, the head of the IRS local office up here or whatever, you know. Yeah, I've definitely had judges do that, especially in a controversial, highly charged case.
It would fall under the general heading of judicial latitude, wouldn't it? Or...
Oh, sure. The judge would clearly have the ability to do that. Now, DOJ might run in there with some kind of an emergency request to stay the court's order. You know?
Yeah, request denied. Time's a wasting.
Yeah.
Right. Don't all of these machinations fall under the general heading of what you see in a South American or some Asian country where there's a dictator trying vainly to game the system to his or her benefit? I mean, come on.
Well, that could be. I'm not an expert in comparative law, so, you know, I can't exactly say how South American or Asian countries operate, this guy is pulling out all the stops to try and, basically pretermit any inquiry into, you know, what Donnie did, basically.
Well, let me ask you this, Rick. Mm-hmm. As I referenced earlier, Bill Barr to prosecution has been stone cold busted for, well, briefing the president on shit that he said he was not going to let him see. What's the remedy to that?
Is this the Mueller report? What is this, Bob?
Okay. Yeah. The New York Times, I read it a little bit ago. Justice Department officials have had numerous conversations with White House lawyers about the conclusions made by Mr. Mueller in recent days.
Well, that's sort of like the, you know, if it's a real prosecution, let's say it's the United States versus, you know, Joe Blow, and I'm Joe Blow, that's like, you know, my defense attorneys having conversations with the prosecutor as to, you know, how they're going to try the case, what their strategy is going to be, you know. That just doesn't happen when you have a real adversarial relationship. But obviously, you know, DOJ is in the tank for Trump here. All I can say is this is not the same agency I once worked for. I'm actually quite ashamed of DOJ's, behavior in the Trump regime during the
kind of like
regime.
how I feel when I look at CNN.
Right, right.
That ain't the same organization I worked for once.
No, but they're trying to some extent.
Well, yeah, some.
Within the limited area that they can because of money and advertisers and so forth, you know?
But, we're about 28 minutes from the end of the program, and I need to sort of put it out there. We're trying to finish off at least Monday's fundraising. So we're about $58 away from that, which means we're about $308 away from being done, all the way caught up. But $58 gets us taken care of for Monday, and then we'll worry about today and tomorrow, and et cetera. So if anybody wants to jump in the next 27 minutes or so, just getting Monday out of the way would be pretty freaking awesome. So thanks very kindly in advance to anyone who does, and thanks to everybody who's made it, who's brought it down this evening. I cannot thank you enough. Let's see, Rick. So we've got, even in the course of providing legal representation, a lawyer can engage in an illegal conspiracy, can't he or she?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I would say so, definitely.
And to what extent did Bill Barr and Rod Rosenstein, I mean, is there any legal duty that attaches to them to go and tattle what's in the Mueller report to the White House? Were they, was there any affirmative duty to do that?
I don't think there was any affirmative duty. Again, I haven't read the DOJ regulations as to special counsel. And that's, those regulations were crafted in the aftermath of the great cleanest hunt of the 90s against President Clinton. And, it could be that there is some kind of a reporting requirement from DOJ to the White House. I don't know. Barr does report to the president. So I don't know that anything, even though there doesn't appear to be any affirmative duty of which I'm aware for him to tell the president anything, I don't think there's a prohibition either. So this is probably, Bob, one of those gray areas where, it allows for, lots of rat fuckery, let's just say. You know what I'm saying?
We're going to be undone by that shit.
You gave the right analogy. It stinks, but I say it stinks like, pardon me, like 90-year-old or 90-month-old, pardon me, 90-day-old mackerel under a 3-degree temperature situation. It just stinks to high heaven, and it troubles me that, yes, I understand that the Attorney General is the head of a branch of a department of government overseen by the executive branch of the national government. Yes, I get that. But there have been times in our history, more often than not, when the AG is impassive and at least has a sense that we the people are his main client. Donald Trump has his own lawyers, okay, Giuliani and the rest of them. There's been a revolving door of lawyers if you look back over the past 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
And they've come and they've gone, and they've gone more than they've come. And some of them have spoken as to what, or at least other people in the inner circles of the White House have spoken in books like Fear and other exposés of just what a fucking moron and paranoid Trump is. And if, and then all along he gets up and says to his red-hatted hordes that, oh, we've already seen and heard all that we need to see and hear, and I have nothing to hide. Well, if he has nothing to hide, what is he jumping through flaming hoops and twisting himself like a pretzel to hide things for? If there's nothing to hide, there seems to be a there is what I'm getting at.
Well, yeah. I mean, how do you explain why Barr is going to the trouble of color coding all of the redactions? I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah. Well, it's just as crazy as getting poor old John Stennis, Democratic Senator of Mississippi, back during Watergate, when the people were not satisfied with the caliber and quality of the transcripts of selected Watergate tapes. Nixon, with a straight face, proposed, we'll bring an old tottering John Stennis who had a hearing issue and had recently been shot by a mugger on the streets of Washington to wheel him in to listen to the tapes. Well, even someone with 20/20 hearing could not always ascertain what was on the tapes.
Hey, that's cowbell, Scott. 2020 hearing.
I agree. Yes.
I don't come here for the cowbells. I'm just trying to make a damn point, kids.
Well, that's another one. Yeah.
But you get the sense of where my mind is with this thing.
Yeah, I mean, just because it's legal doesn't mean it is right or ethical, for Barr to basically huddle with the president's attorneys and, craft how he's going to do this whitewash. you know, and how he's going to limit the damaging material by, you know, redacting it.
In fact, your co-counsel, Steve in New York, Rick, just sent an email. Questions for Barr. I want someone to ask Bill Barr in a hearing, under oath, two questions. Who's your client? Whom do you represent? Good questions.
Yeah.
Steve adds, see, Bob, I told you there's no difference between Democrats and Republicans.
Well, and so my overriding point here as we reach whatever's next in this adventure is if Barr were up to and up for performing his duties impeccably, he would know that now more than ever, it's imperative upon him to be as clean as a hound's tooth that we've heard so much about. Okay? But, and like we said earlier, we tried to tell people coming in when Trump nominated this guy that he was the cleaner. He was the Mike Ehrmantraut, a.k.a.
He's the fixer. He's the fixer of the cleaner. Yeah, exactly.
And it's, again, this was avoidable. I won't even try to relive.
You know, and this is another. I mean, his conduct in this case is a great example of why malfeasance by high level officials needs to be prosecuted, because he lied to Congress as to the in his memo, I guess, whereby he said the president had authority to kidnap foreign leader, namely Manuel Noriega. And he misstated what his opinion was to Congress. It was only a couple of years after the fact that the truth was revealed. This was going back to
H.W. Bush.
Right.
Yes.
Right. This is going back to H.W. Bush. This is going back to the late 80s. Yeah, exactly. And so the thing is, if you don't punish people for wrongdoing, they come back up. Just look at all of the cast of characters that is back in power in the foreign policy realm. We have guys like Elliot Abrams, John Negroponte. We got all these horrific individuals that now have essentially positions with this Trump administration. And if justice had been done in the first instance, these people would be convicted felons.
Pardoned, but convicted.
What's that, Bob?
I said pardoned, but convicted.
Right.
And apparently Jerry Nadler is none too happy about all of this. He has said, I'm deeply troubled by reports that the White House is being briefed on the Mueller report ahead of its release. Now DOJ is informing us we will not receive the report until around 11 or 12 tomorrow afternoon after Barr's press conference. This is wrong. #release the report.
I've got an idea, Bob.
I was going to ask about the press conference tomorrow.
You'll have to get up at 6. You guys will have to be up at 6:30 to see that thing.
Well, yeah. I probably will not have gone to bed by 6:30 in the morning.
Wow. Okay.
So I'll be up for it, but I don't think I'll be up for it. If you get what I mean here.
Yeah, I do.
There's a foreboding going on within my soul and spirit and mind and heart, Bob and Rick, that I don't like where this is headed. You know, and given Barr's track record, and given what we know about Trump, and given what Rick said about the cast of characters from administrations of past coming back into positions of authority and influence, can I be wrong to be a little squeamish and nervous about? It's like when you get into the roller coaster and you're all strapped in and buckled in and barred in and stuff, and the guy throws that big switch.
And all of a sudden you go, I don't want to go.
Why did I do this? What was I thinking?
It's too late to have second thoughts once the guy has pulled the big switch.
You're going to puke.
Yes.
Or you get a whiplash. Or get a whiplash.
Or a bird in the face.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Well, you know, one wonders why Barr didn't decide to delay the release of this report till Easter Sunday or something like that. You know, the way he's like, you know, he timed it. When
look,
you know,
tomorrow is tomorrow's the day before Good Friday. People, there are people out there who will take tomorrow off, having gotten Good Friday off, to make the Easter weekend a long one for them. He's hoping some of those are journalists.
Right. I don't think so. I don't think journalists will be taking the day off.
Meanwhile, Steve in New York says, oh, dear, dear Scott, he is performing his duties impeccably.
Meanwhile, this was
bound to happen. But Irish Dave says, quit telling us what the AG can't do and shit. So.
Oh, geez. This is like, you know, it's so obvious what's going on. This is like, you know, cover up in real time, covering up the cover up, you know, and it's just disgusting. I mean, I knew it as soon as Barr was nominated that he was going to be a problem because of his role with Iran-Contra and, you know, recommending that H.W. Bush pardon everybody, not just Cap Weinberger, who was set to go on trial in January of 93, but everybody. Just let's do Christmas pardons. Let's just kill this whole.
Well, and Barr admitted in an interview, he said they were talking about pardoning Weinberger, and Barr said, "Nope, in for a penny, in for a pound. Pardon a lot of them."
Yeah, yeah, right, right. He is a pure party apparatchik. That's all this guy is. He's not the Attorney General. He's like, you know.
He's a mob consigliere.
Exactly. Exactly. He is.
Here's the difference between me and most people. People are probably sick of hearing me say this. I have not been seduced by the notion that Mueller is some sort of pure Galahad out galumphing along on his percheron, just waiting for his chance to show. Bullshit.
Well, you know, Bob,
Republicans is Republicans. It's Denny Green. They are who we thought they are.
Right, right. I mean, Galahad died in the Middle Ages, Bob. You know? Just like the people who built Notre Dame. Well,
here's what I want to know. Did Mueller or one of his people or someone, the guy or woman in the copying machine room, squirrel away a copy of the unredacted report? And if so, how soon can pages from that, if not the entire thing, be secreted to the journalists? Because we've got to have a fallback position here.
I got a better idea. It's kind of like the Pentagon Papers. Yeah. Have somebody secrete it to a congressman and have them go to the floor and read the whole damn report.
Well, there's as, a thought.
You know?
Who did that? That was the Alaskan senator, I guess, who I think is going to run in 2020.
Is he? Mike Gravel, is he still alive?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure he is.
And I saw something... A headline the other day mentioning his name, and I figured, well, that could only mean one of two things. He's either passed on or he's going to announce in 2020. I didn't read the news.
Why not? Bernie and Joe are running, so what the hell, right? Just throw everybody in there.
And speaking of Bernie, okay, I don't have the tier of service on my cable that includes Fox News, okay, because I can't afford it. I haven't had those fancy channels for 18 months now, somewhere in there. But I did find on YouTube part one and part two of Bernie's town hall meeting. I think he did a fine job. And I think Martha McCullum, I don't like her. I mean, Bret Baier was okay. I mean, he was somewhat.
Well, he got punked, and that was kind of cute.
But I didn't like Martha. Send her off to another assignment because she was egging Bernie on and muddling up the waters, you know, stirring up the clouds of stupid, and that wasn't why Bernie was there. It was a town hall The hall was filled with people. It was the people whose questions we were interested in being heard answered. And he did a pretty good job, I thought.
He did a great job. He kicked ass, you know. I mean, it's great when Fox probably wishes they didn't extend him the invitation. But I mean, the interesting.
Well, they didn't wish it bad enough not to extend one to Pete Buttigieg too.
That's true. That's true.
Well, I like Pete. I think.
Yeah.
I don't like him. But I don't think there's anything to be had by going on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda.
Well, there's actually a lot of people who voted for Bernie in the primary and voted for Trump in the general election. I heard somewhere that 100,000...
Because Trump told them to. I mean, that happened in particular here in West Virginia, Rick.
Okay.
He showed up, he put on a miner's helmet and said, "And by the way, I don't need your vote in the primary. I want you to all go and vote for Bernie, and then in November vote for me." And well, they did that.
That's true. That's
true. You're questioning the wisdom of Mayor Pete going on next on Fox Town Hall. I think there is a good reason for him to go, and it's simply this. For the past 2 years and then 4 years before that and back to the founding days of Fox News, Democrats have been painted as these two-headed, green-scaled, fire-breathing horror.
Yeah, and what did years and years of having Alan Colmes be Sean Hannity's doormat do for that? I mean, I'm not being cranky here, but
yeah, but they were.
Bob, stop telling us how to be cranky or not to be cranky.
Hannity and Colmes.
Yeah, I'm not in favor of Mayor Pete going on Fox because I'm also not in favor of frogs giving rides across creeks to fucking scorpions.
Well, no, I'm just saying that there is a purpose to be had here, and that is for influenceable people watching Fox while Pete is on to hear something other than what they usually hear. And that alone is worth it, I think. And I could be wrong, but I'm just
saying.
And what are their names, Scott, both of them?
I've got a second benefit, Scott. This is ancillary to the first benefit you mentioned, which may or may not really be that substantial. It shows that they can stand up to the bullies of Fox, the bully journalists / commentators of Fox, and they get publicity and they show that they're a tough candidate. They'll appear in front of anybody, speak to anybody. They're not afraid of the tough questions, those sorts of things. That can't hurt your candidacy,
well,
I don't think.
Yeah. And to answer your question, Bob, what are their names in terms of influenceable viewers?
That was a joke.
Looking at, I know. But you've got to admit that there are people who don't like CNN and think that MSNBC is too radical and can't get through on Washington Journal on C-SPAN. So their only alternative, as far as a mainstream sort of news outlet, is Fox. And they don't take everything that Fox spouts as gospel truth. They just want to watch an alternative and make up their own mind. But if all that you're being presented is the usual horseshit that Fox pumps out, you don't have a material enough to use in the process of making up your mind, which is why it's good to have somebody like Bernie or Mayor Pete to leaven that loaf of nastiness with a little bit of reality-based reality is all I'm saying.
I understand. And meanwhile, I need to send out thanks to Anatole. Thank you, Anatole. We got $8 to go to finish Monday. $8.
Oh.
Thanks to Anatole. But Ron and Raleigh with a note. Wait a damn minute. Mayor Pete is an Israeli lickspittle. You couldn't pay me to vote for that guy. He said the U.S. could use the Israeli model to handle security problems. Fuck him. I had not heard that. I need to read up on that.
I hadn't either.
Find me the candidate who is going. Find me the Democratic candidate who is going to unequivocally say, "It's time to pull the aid from Israel." not maybe we could, it's time to do it. Because there's another story out there, and this is a different topic altogether, but it deserves to be mentioned. It's prayer meeting Wednesday, and so, you know, tomorrow's Maudlin Thursday, or whatever they call it, this story just sickened me. And it's, wait a minute. It sickened me, but it's from 2017, so, I forgot to check the dateline. But it goes back to that day that the EU paid to build some schools for Palestinian children in the West Bank. And the Israelis came along like days after the school had opened and fucking bulldozed them. And said, well, these are illegal schools because they're going to educate little Palestinian children. And we didn't say that it was okay to educate little Palestinian children. So, at some point in time, it would be nice to have a government that didn't bow and scrape to Israel and just embarrass ourselves. Steve, with a note in New York, going on Fox, here's a good part. When no Republican goes on any MSNBC or CNN town hall, the Democrat can then call the Republican candidate a coward. That would piss candidate Trump the hell right off. And by the way, will there be Republican debates now that William Weld has declared himself a candidate for the Republican nomination for president? You know, William Weld, who was governor of Massachusetts and is not crazy.
But who ran with the Libertarian, wasn't it the Libertarian candidate in 16?
Yeah.
Yeah, he ran with the stoner dude, but he was the vice president. But Weld ain't running as a Libertarian. He's running as a Republican.
Yeah. But I've got a question.
They're not going to have debates. There's no way.
I've got a question as we get to the waning moments of the show with Thursday over the horizon here. It's probably Thursday in parts of the world already. You've heard if you're a Sherlock Holmes watcher or reader, you know the story of the dog who didn't bark, the dog that didn't bark, okay?
Right.
What shall we be watching for in terms of what's missing in whatever we get to see starting tomorrow? What should we have our eyes peeled and ears peeled for?
I got a few ideas, Scott.
Well, tell me.
Okay, is the report going to mention anything about the Trump Tower meeting that Donnie Jr. Agreed to, whereby dirt on Hillary would be presented to the Trump campaign?
That's a good one.
Is there going to be any mention as to Trump's continuing efforts to get a Trump Tower Moscow, even as late as the fall of the 2016 campaign? You know, it did not end in January of 2016, as had been, previously claimed by administration officials. What else is there? Is there going to be any mention of the sharing by Manafort of internal campaign polling data to a, was it a Ukrainian? To a Ukrainian who was sympathetic to Russia. Okay, a pro-Russian Ukrainian.
Another good one. I've got one.
So those are...
Will the report actually mention what Mueller said what was the verbiage that Mueller used that was not mentioned at all or played down by Barr in his little four-page thing about Trump?
Neither exonerated nor... Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Will the report mention that? Because I'm still mad about Barr's little four-page thing less than 2 days after the report was submitted to Barr. He whipped out a little four-page, classic comics edition of the report, and just whitewashed anything that should have been seen. Meanwhile, a year before, he, unbidden by anyone, submits a 19-page memo on why you know, a president can't be looked into with any
for obstruction of justice.
Right, and, yeah. and here's a couple more. Stephen New York asks, in the report, will there be any mention, positive or negative, of the Steele dossier?
Ooh.
Right.
Which is kind of telling because Julius Geiser in the past couple of days has been back on the Steele dossier again.
That might be a tell.
Let's see here. I think I can find it. Give me a second.
Did you hear what Bill Maher had to say about the Steele document? He disagrees that Russian hookers were paid to pee all over the presidential bed in that hotel in Russia because he doesn't say that the hookers didn't pee all over the bed of that fancy hotel in Russia. He just says that Trump never paid them. So
maybe
I think that's a safe bet.
Well, maybe that was hey, you know, it was probably an emolument. So 13 hours ago, the Clementine Caligula said, "Wow, FBI made 11 payments to fake dossiers to discredited author Trump hater Christopher Steele. The witch hunt has been a total fraud on your president and the American people. It was brought to you by dirty cops, crooked Hillary, and the DNC."
He protesteth too much.
Well, I mean, he's been clued. He's been clued. Mm-hmm. So I'd say the answer to Steve's question is, yeah, it's probably mentioned. Meanwhile, James in Illinois says, Barr had the report for a week, as it turned out. And then the following question from Jack in Shreveport, and thanks again to Jack for helping out this evening, emoluments, could the Trump Tower Moscow thing be put into the Barr emoluments exception such that anything flowing from it could be dispensed with as far as the Mueller report goes? Maybe that's why all this... Maybe it's not just the emoluments litigation. Maybe it's all... Maybe it's that. Jack, that's a great question. And then I got one more. And this is purely physical. I want to know how this report will look in its redacted state. Will the stuff that's redacted be color-coded? Will there be some yellow redactions and some blue redactions and some pink redactions and some green redactions? Or will there simply be a color-coded star saying, we redacted some shit here?
Well, you know what I think?
Or will we see black bars?
This won't go to answer your question, but I sure as hell would like to own the printer toner concession at the Justice Department. Rich, I'm telling you, I'm rich.
But the I don't just ask that idly, because I think it will if you've got great physical spaces that are just blacked out or colored out or whatever,
yeah,
then that's going to tell us a lot more than just he hands them a report and then says, you know, I've redacted this.
Yeah.
Note coming in from Lady B, and we'll wrap the program with this. It's frustrating, isn't it, Bob? Frustrating when the law so clearly defines what is and isn't illegal, like shooting an unarmed person, or building a fence that extends into your neighbor's property, or not paying a stranger to build your house or cook and clean and wet nurse your child. Some of us get so used to this illegal treatment that we consider it typical behavior from the people who do it. Problem now is those very people are now having it being done to them by the very people they put in power to help them. They thought they were among the chosen. Kel surprise. I voted for Hillary Clinton. She was the fucking Democratic Party nominee, and no amount of fucking whining and protesting was going to make it any different. I'm used to shit not turning out exactly as I think it should. So I go with the second logical option. I didn't take a chance on fucking up my life and freedoms any more than they already are. But many of my fellow Americans felt that if they couldn't get what they wanted, then it was not worth thinking about anymore. But now the chosen are being afflicted, and it's more than physical. It affects everything they fucking ever based any values and life principles on. It's existential. We look for metaphysical ways to explain just how horrible human beings can be sometimes. We pray for the Deus Ex Machina. I'm sure we'll find one, and although they'll save that day, they may just be putting off the inevitable. We've got to change, and my God, my stomach sinks at the thought. This shit is maybe far worse than we imagine. This isn't going to wrap up tidy and neat. Trump is a harbinger of things to come. All because we were too comfortable with how our individual lives were going instead of what other human beings may have been going through. Passez une bonne journée, Bob. It's a bumpy ride. No shit, Lady B. And there's so much.
Well said, Lady B.
There is so much truth in that, because, especially the harbinger of what's to come. And he's certainly no Octavian. But Caesar Augustus found a way. He's off in the fucking weeds of the Romans again. Caesar Augustus found a way to bring some stability to a country that had been, that had the living shit ripped out of it for the last 125 years by various degrees of civil unrest, from the social war to the civil war, a couple of them, to Marius and Sulla, to the triumvirate, to the murder of Caesar, Pompey, Brutus and Cassius, all and ultimately, you know, Mark Antony and Cleopatra. And so when the smoke finally cleared, Octavian was there, and he put Rome to rights, but he did so as an autocrat who maintained the facade of republican rule. But in what Augustus did lay the seeds of Nero and Caligula, Galba, Otho, and from Octavian forward, the best that the Romans could hope for was that you'd get a string of good emperors once in a while. Because most of them were just autocratic assholes. And so for every Marcus Aurelius, there is, by God, a Commodus. And that's what's out in front of us. When Lady B says that it's not going to be neat and tidy to clean up, it's the truth. But if we do not clean up now, there is no hope for whatever that form of governance was that was ratified in 1787. I've taken to referring to the velvet knee breeches and powdered wig crowd a lot lately. Because if you pay any attention, for instance, to Dr. Bill, he will make it abundantly clear for you that they had a very different idea of constitutional governance than what we have now. And what we have now is stylized. It's the kind of thing that happens as governmental structures evolve toward entropy instead of being something that's vibrant, alive. Because here's the weird thing. You can have a hybrid view of the Constitution. You can have a Constitution that's a living document that responds to the needs of the people at the same time that you have reverence and adherence, more importantly, to the principles on which the Constitution is grounded. And I'm not talking about the three-fifths clause and the ugly shit that undergirds it. I'm talking about ideas like three branches of government, each of which has its hands on the throat of the other by design. And they, maybe I need to get Dr. Bill on here to talk about this a little bit more. But the framers of the Constitution had it in their heads that the Congress would be able to impeach the president for the fuck-ups of his subordinates. If the Secretary of State fucks up, you impeach the president for picking a fucked up Secretary of State. They wanted a certain amount of chaotic tension in the structure. And we've gotten away from that. And damn Katherine Graham and Ben Bradley for defining the impeachment of Richard Nixon as a constitutional crisis. Damn them, because it was not. What Nixon was trying to do would have constituted a constitutional crisis, but impeaching his ass was the Constitution working precisely as it was designed to work. I don't know, maybe we need to elect a few people to Congress who say, I'm going to show up for work every day in velvet knee pants and a powdered fucking wig until we realize that we need to be running this joint the way it was designed to be run. So, but things like, you know, checking bar when he decides to just unilaterally gut the emoluments clause. Fuck you, Bill. Checking the president by impeaching him, even if the Senate. I know, I'm the one who said we probably shouldn't impeach. But I reserve the right, having been here for a lot of years, to periodically change my mind. And I think some minds are changing in the Congress, too, because it sounds like Jerry Nadler is contemplating impeaching Bill Barr.
It's a matter of checks and balances that are actually checks and balances.
Yeah.
What you're saying.
But Nadler called a Wednesday evening press conference, and maybe we'd better finish on this. I think he's worth listening to in this regard. Because I get the idea Jerry Nadler might just about be at his breaking point and ready to fuck with some people. And if he is, good on him.
Russians, maybe Trump did.
Let me stop you right there, David Corn. We're going to take Jerry Nadler, chair of the Judiciary Committee, who is holding a hastily scheduled press conference at this hour. Let's listen in.
Enemies of Florida and Hakeem Jeffries of New York, who is also the chairman of the Democratic Caucus. The Attorney General appears to be waging a media campaign on behalf of President Trump, the very subject of the investigation at the heart of the Mueller report. Rather than letting the facts of the report speak for themselves, the Attorney General has taken unprecedented steps to spin Mueller's nearly two-year investigation. One, he summarized the report and cherry-picked findings in his March 24th letter to Congress. Two, he withheld summaries written by the special counsel that were intended for public consumption. Three, he has briefed the White House on the report before providing Congress a copy, which has helped them prepare a rebuttal response for the president. And now, the evening before the report's scheduled release, the Department of Justice has informed the committee that it will receive a copy between 11 a.m. and noon, well after the Attorney General's 9:30 a.m. press conference. This is wrong. It is contrary to the Attorney General's own words to the committee. Quote, I do not believe it would be in the public's interest for me to attempt to summarize the full report or to release it in serial or piecemeal fashion. Close quote. It now appears the Attorney General intends to once again put his own spin on the investigative work completed by the special counsel and his team. The fact that the Attorney General is not releasing even the report to Congress until after his press conference will again result in the report being presented through his own words rather than through the words of Special Counsel Mueller. The central concern here is that the Attorney General Barr is not allowing the facts of the Mueller report to speak for themselves, but is trying to bake in the narrative about the report to the benefit of the White House. And, of course, he's doing this just before the holiday weekend, so it's extraordinarily difficult for anybody to react. This is wrong. It is not the proper role of the Attorney General. I should add one other thing. the Department of Justice in a court filing in the Roger Stone case today said that some members of Congress may get access to some of the redacted information only for use in secret. The Judiciary Committee has no knowledge of this, and this should not be read as any agreement or knowledge or assent on our part. Thank you very much. Oh, we'll take a couple of questions.
All right, looks like Chair Jerry Nadler is going to take a few questions. Let's see what they have to say.
For a limited number of members of Congress.
We are certainly not satisfied with that. We've repeatedly said what is demanded by the situation, and that is that the Judiciary Committee be given the entire report and the underlying evidence so that we can make those judgments for ourselves. And the Judiciary Committee can, as has been the case in prior situations, decide which limited portions of the report might have to be kept secret so as not to reveal sources and methods of intelligence or for some other legitimate reason. But that's a decision for the committee to make, not for the Attorney General or the administration. Yes.
We'll take one more question. Is there a plan
to issue subpoenas from anyone else for that matter?
Well, we'll have to take the time over the next couple of days to carefully read the redacted report so that we don't find out that, in fact, there's very little left out. But on the assumption that it's heavily redacted, we will most certainly issue the subpoenas in very short order.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Ask Mueller to testify?
I'll answer that. I assume we'll probably find it useful to ask Mueller to testify, and I assume we may ask members of his team to testify, but we'll have to make those decisions after reading what we get, as inadequate as that may be.
Thank you, everybody.
He sounds like he's not a happy man.
No, he's definitely pissed, Bob.
and rightly so.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, maybe. Well, all we can do is wait and see. Rick, I want to thank you for joining in with Scott and me. We really appreciated the insights, and thanks to Steve, your co-counsel, for jumping in as well. I say that with tongue in cheek, but y'all are both very good at your craft and your professions, and I appreciate your input. Scott, thank you.
Well, and Bob, I appreciate your letting me take the last little bit here with Rick, because I think the weightiness of what's to come tomorrow deserves a Mueller redacted release pregame show of sorts. And you do it better than most out on the airwaves and the bits and bytes of the internet. And with helpful assistance by Rick and Steve and the other Horn family members, it's a resource that comes in quite handy at times like these, you know? So just hats off to you and the others for making it possible.
And, I was going to add one more thing. Bob, I predict that some of the points that we've raised about, what's important is to look at what's not in the Mueller report. We're going to see some of this stuff repeated on the mainstream media. whether because they listen to the program or not, I mean, who knows?
Well, I absolutely agree, and it will largely be a function of the fact that we're generally a few miles out ahead of things. I don't know how it works out that way, but it somehow does. And by the way, who's got the chirping in the background?
Oh, that's my phone. I think that's Joe from Cleveland getting together for happy hour.
Oh, okay. I was hoping maybe there was a new bird in the family, but oh well. My phone does.
Yeah, I thought maybe
it's not chirps.
Have gotten reanimated.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not chirps the cat either.
My phone does crickets, but I turn it off during the program, so at least I usually remember to. Well, thanks, guys. Thanks a bunch, and thanks to all of you who have jumped in this evening so kindly and so generously to wipe out all but $8 of Monday. And so that means tomorrow we'll just be dealing with, tomorrow it'll be 508, but that beats the hell out of 750. So thank you very, very kindly. And, well, ordinary program tomorrow, to the extent that this program is ever ordinary. And thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks very kindly to pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy Steve from Georgistan moderating this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years leading the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.